Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from just over the fiscal bluff with my eye on the Imperial City, where the crier of the house has been reelected, and the Imperial President sits on his socialist throne, ready to throw your country down the toilet.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from Houston, Texas, in the Aluminum Cathedral. We switched from the crystal to the aluminum because it's clear aluminum, Captain, which actually turns out it's easier to clean. That crystal, you can't get that stuff clean, but this stuff you hit with Windex, that's fine.
Excellent. Better maintenance, more efficient. Maybe you could teach the government a thing or two.
That's right. We're, see, you wouldn't believe the amount of money we're saving on this contract here for this aluminum.
Well, it looks like little Johnny Boehner was reelected by the House Republicans, which, you know, we kind of had a feeling was coming, but apparently there were 10 dissenting votes.
Bunch of naysayers in the group. Well, that's always encouraging. A few naysayers has the potential to grow into a larger snowball of naysayers. And, you know, who knows how things go over the next 12 months with this guy, but if he continues on the path he's on, they can always switch things up or at a minimum have a vote of no confidence in it, which would at least indicate that he's not doing too good a job.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know that... He's it needs to be revealed he's not doing a job. He clearly isn't, and we'll talk about that. But real quick, Tex, the 10 Republicans who did not vote for little Johnny Boy, they should be thanked, and they should be encouraged, because if you don't encourage those who stand up on principle for conservatism, you're just going to keep getting more rhino bullshit. And I'm going to go ahead and name them, and it's also posted on our Facebook page, so... I would recommend everybody go to our Facebook page, which is the Tex and Rex Show, everything spelled out on Facebook, and we post the articles, clips, and other information from the show on our page, and we also put the links to the Blog Talk Radio show that we're broadcasting. You can also, if you have a Blog Talk Radio profile, you can go ahead and click follow right under the show icon and follow the show. You will get notifications of when we are broadcasting, and if you'd like to call in and chat about little Johnny Boehner or the fiscal bluff or what the Republican Party and conservatives should do going forward, the call-in number is 646-649-1013. Again, that's 646-649-1013. Now, some Republican in Congress skipped the roll call when they were called to vote. Two that I can think of off the top of my head are Michelle Bachmann, who was hinting at challenging Boehner, and Congressman Blackburn. But after the roll call was done, they were called back, and Boehner had already secured the vote, so they just jumped in line so that they wouldn't ruffle his feathers, because obviously the Speaker is a pretty powerful position and can wreak havoc on congressmen with their committees and such, as Boehner had done right before the election. But those who did not vote for him, seven of them voted for somebody else, three of them didn't vote at all. And I know everybody's saying, well, there were like 15 votes or something like that that didn't vote for Boehner or Pelosi. Well, I think five of them were actually Democrats or independents. They were Pelosi votes. But there were 10 Republican votes that did not vote for Boehner, which I think is pretty significant. And those include Representative Justin Amash, who voted for Raul Labrador. Jim Bridenstine voted for Eric Cantor. Now, I don't know if he likes Eric Cantor or it was just simply he wanted to dissent from Boehner but didn't want to piss off the entire leadership, so he voted for the number two rhino, knowing that he probably wasn't going to displace Boehner. Paul, I believe it's pronounced Brown, B-R-O-U-N, he voted for Alan West. Louis Gohmert, who actually nominated Newt Gingrich, voted for Alan West. Walter Jones voted for David Walker. Tim Hulskamp voted for Jim Jordan. Tom Massey voted for Justin Amash. Steve Pierce voted for Cantor. And Ted Yoho voted for Cantor. Three didn't vote for anybody. Steve Stockman voted for, he voted present. Raul Labrador, who got a vote from Justin Amash, he did not vote. And Mick Mulvaney did not vote. So, you know, I would suggest that you contact these fine conservatives and thank them for their dissenting vote, because even though we didn't succeed, it was good that they stood up. Wouldn't you agree?
Send them a belated Christmas card at least, or add them to next year's Christmas card list at a minimum. But definitely contact them and let them know that, hey, you know, people need to be standing up against this left turn that the Republican Party seems to have taken. And it's not even clear, is this a left turn? They seem to try to indicate that it is. Or is it just plain old-fashioned incompetence, where they just don't know what they're doing? I think it's a little of both.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for those of you who are operating on the traditional calendar, it's still Christmas. Today's the Epiphany. We got one more week of Christmas, so it would be fine to send them a Christmas card. But most importantly is, you know, one of the big questions we're always asking Texas, what are we going to do? How are we going to fix this? Where are we going forward? And it's easy to get, you know, despondent and in despair. But the simple fact is that, you know, this is our country. We know conservative principles are true. They're right. They work, authentic conservative principles. And so you got to keep fighting. And what you do is instead of just sitting back and bitching and complaining, you wake other people up one at a time. And when you find a servant, because remember something, every elected position in this country is a servant. They are not our masters. They are servants. They go into public office to serve. And when you find one who stands up on principle, who's even willing to take flack for it instead of being a political weasel, support them. Because if you let them fall down, if you let them get beat up and you don't show them, you know, some supporting encouragement, then you'll get less of them and you'll get more rhinos. And it's a very simple thing. It's sort of like, you know, when you're dealing with a company, whether it's, you know, your credit card company or the bank or a retail outfit or a restaurant or something like that, and they screw something up. You bitch and you complain. You might write a strongly worded letter. You talk to the manager. You do all this stuff. But do you take the same effort when they do something good, when they do something right? You know? So we tend to focus on negatives. Go ahead.
I worked for a credit card company, and nobody ever called and said, hey, you guys are doing a great job. That's why I waited on hold for 10 minutes, and then they hung up.
Right.
So you got to reward these guys when they're in Washington, because they really are sort of out there alone. They don't hear from their districts as much as they would like, or at least some of them don't hear from their districts as much as they would like. And when they do take a stand like this, they need to know that they're not alone, because there are punishments that are meted out from the Speaker of the House or other people in leadership against this kind of action. So they need to know that you support them. And that encourages others to come out and make sure next time they succeed.
Yeah, it's especially true because, I mean, most of us, you're somewhat of an exception, Tex, but most of us have never experienced. Most of us have never experienced the kind of pressure that can be brought to bear in Washington, and it's pretty devastating. I mean, look at what Boehner and McCarthy and Ryan and Cantor did to Amash and Jones and Hulskamp and Schweikert, you know, with their committee memberships because they didn't support his faux, you know, slashing budget. They remove them from their committee positions, and it's especially bold when a freshman takes this kind of stand because, let's face it, when you're the low man on the totem pole, you may not have as much to lose, but you're certainly going to be put in a position where you don't have any retaliatory power because you have no friends yet. So, you know, that's a serious principled stand that some of them take. Interestingly, Schweikert, I believe, ended up voting for Boehner, and I don't have any details as to what it is that he was promised or how they got him, but, you know, the other three, Hiltzkamp, Amash, and Jones, did not vote for Boehner, as they justly shouldn't have to. And speaking of freshmen, we've got a freshman representative, Ted Yoho, who voted against Boehner, and he actually explains it. Would you like to hear him explain his vote against Boehner, Tex?
Absolutely. Let's
All right, it's about a minute and a half, and it's pretty good.
Does he swear in it at all? Because, you know, we got to think of our audience.
No, he doesn't. Okay. Because we I know our audience is very sensitive to foul language. No, this is with the not Erin Brockovich. What's this chick's name? Erin something. She's on CNN out front with Erin something. I'm not sure what she's out front doing, but anyway. So let's listen to Yoho explain his. Vote against Boehner.
All right, you voted for Majority Leader Eric Cantor, not John Boehner. That took some guts on your first day. How come?
Erin, what I did is, what we did is we were challenging leadership to let them know that we're going to hold them accountable, just like I get held accountable in my district by our constituents. And we want to let them know that we're watching. And, you know, we're willing to work with leadership, and I look forward to doing that. And that's why I stuck with the Republican Party with Mr. Cantor.
Well, let me ask you a little bit more about that, because you were quoted in the National Journal as saying, I'll quote you, career politicians created this mess, or at least they didn't do anything to prevent it. So, you know, you term limited yourself, you said, to 8 years.
Did.
So should everyone face that limit, even those already in office?
Well, I think people ought to limit themselves. You know, I set that limit of 8 years because I figured that was good enough for George Washington. It's good enough for me. You know, the founders didn't intend for us to make a living out of this or that long of a career. And that's for each person to decide. Me personally, I decided for 8 years. And it goes back to what you said there. You know, our message that got us here was that the career politicians did get us here. And they either led us to where we're at or they failed to prevent it. Neither is acceptable. And this is a time that we need to put America first. Not so much a political party. The parties are important. But it's more important to put our country first, and I look forward to doing that, and I let leadership know that I'm willing to work for them, work with them, but yet I'm also willing to stand up against them.
Well, Tex, clearly he didn't use any off-color words, but I will say that I think that stance took some serious balls.
Absolutely, I agree. I mean, you know, you're voting against the Speaker of the House. You're in his party. You're in his under his influence. He controls what committee assignments that you're in. So it's definitely a difficult position to take. But he's right. As congressmen, they're answerable to their constituents, and the Speaker of the House should be answerable to his constituents, which are the members of his own party. And nobody likes the leadership that he's providing, or lack of it. And there's good reason for that, because it's very uninspired leadership. It's rudderless, visionless leadership. Which really is no leadership at all.
Yeah, or it's leadership that is intending to, you know, fundamentally transform the Republican Party into something that it says that it isn't. Now, you know, there's a lot of arguing that can be said that, you know, they've gone down the socialist rabbit hole a long time ago, that they haven't been really Republican, clearly conservative, clearly, you know, Rove's compassionate conservatism of the millennium was not in any way truly conservative, but the simple fact is that they still say that they are, and that's the thing that I think is more aggravating than anything else. I mean, if you guys are going to become a bunch of statist, corporatist, you know, left-weaning douchebags, then, you know, say the Republican Party is no longer conservative, change your platform, say that you're socialist, so that at least the rank and file that pays attention sporadically every 2 or 4 years would be like, hey, wait a minute, this isn't the Republican Party I want to be a member of, and we'll go find another home. There are other parties out there, Constitution Party, Libertarian Party, you know, so you could do that. But they still pretend to be conservative, and that's the insidious nature of duopoly, because you got the same bullshit coming out of both parties, but they give you this controlled opposition so that people with conservative principles vote for the R or the elephant, and they don't get that. And by the way, Ted Yoho is he's from 3rd Congressional in Florida. So especially you people down there in Florida, give him a shout-out, man, because I think that coming in as a freshman and taking that position, you know, I mean, I don't think it was a surprise to most people when Amash and Hulskamp and Jones didn't vote for Boehner. I think that was to be expected because they knew that they were, you know, removed from their committee, so there was a little bit of bad blood there. But here's this, you know, principled freshman, and instead of, you know, playing along to get position and friends and some political capital and stuff, he just goes balls to the wall and makes a principled stance. I think that's a pretty well, bold move and a pretty big deal.
Exactly. And one of the things is the leadership is sitting there telling you things like, oh, don't worry, it's all good. But in reality, the support among the Republican voter, the Republican voter is absolutely demoralized right now. You know, you can have congressmen who are up there and congresswomen who are up there fighting the good fight, dealing with the leadership. Excuse me, I had to clear my throat. Dealing with the leadership or trying to, you know, force them onto a conservative path. And they see, okay, well, if I vote this way, then maybe I can get something if I, you know, make a deal later. But if you're the average voter, you just see complete bedlam and chaos. And it's starting to infect the Republican brand, and it's starting to erode the support. I mean, this is just down here in Texas, SD7, you know, just a random person I happened to be speaking to about a football game I was watching. The news came up, and they started talking about Boehner and the fiscal cliff. And the guy sitting next to me, he started talking about it. I started talking to him about it as well. And he said, you know, the Republican Party is completely useless. I don't think I'm going to vote for it anymore.
Welcome
and
to
that
the club.
Was completely, yeah, that was without prompting. And, yeah. You know, if you've got a whole bunch of people out there feeling this way about the party, well, that's bad news. And it's indicative of bad leadership, or leadership that can't explain what its vision is, probably because it doesn't want to explain that vision.
Well, I mean, if I was going to objectively look at what their vision is, I would say that John Boehner's vision is to give Obama every damn thing that he wants. So, you know, and let's be clear about a couple of things, okay? Obama won, right? I mean, he's president. He won with 13% less vote than he got in 08. And that's pathetic. That is an easy incumbent to defeat. And the Republicans managed to put together a candidate and a campaign that could lose to this guy who was so easy to defeat. And like what you said, you know, the brand is
they didn't just put it together. They rammed them down our throats.
Yeah.
Against our will.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, is the brand diminished? Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, let's face it. Like you said before, Mitt Romney didn't only lose to Barack Obama. He lost to John McCain because he got less votes than McCain got in 08. I mean, the simple fact is that those who are politically aware and are truly principled in their conservatism have already said screw this. And the fact is that, you know, you shouldn't vote for the Republican Party. The parties are supposed to be the mechanism by which the principles of the party attract candidates who represent those principles, and then people can vote for the candidate and put them into office so that those principles can be affected. You know, but this idea of voting for the party, I mean, that's exactly how they get you to go along with stupid crap that you don't believe in. You know, this couple of weeks from now, we're going to be witnessing the 40th anniversary of the unconstitutional, bad logic, and no law decision of Roe v. Wade. Now, you know, however you feel about abortion or anything else, it's not the point. The point is that it's 40 years now that we've been doing this. And 40 years that the Republican Party has been telling us that they're running a platform that is pro-life. Well, I got to say something. If after 40 years you haven't been able to affect change on something that you put in your platform because you believe it's a principle, you are either lying about that being a principle of your platform, or you are completely incompetent at putting forward the principles of your platform. Either way, you suck and you need to be replaced. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's becoming you know, blindingly clear that something's not right in the state of Denmark. You know, two teams playing a game against each other, okay, one team may be better, so they win more times than another, but the Republican Party loses even when it wins, time after time after time. And then when it starts winning, it starts going after the people who are winning the game. You know, recall the leadership. They're the people who are saying, oh, Charlie Crist is the greatest thing since sliced bread down there in Florida, and everybody should be supporting Charlie Crist. But Charlie Crist is a Democrat now. This is someone they wanted to put into a leadership position. That should be a warning sign to you as to who the leadership of the Republican Party really is. You know, are these people who joined the college Republicans during their college days to infiltrate the party, work their way up, and turn it into a, I mean, that's kind of conspiratorial, you know, and certainly who wants to dedicate their career to that. But they might as well be, you know, whether that's true or not. They certainly act as if that's the case.
Yeah.
So you got to... you know, we just have to find real conservatives and support them. That's why these conservatives who stood up against John Boehner need our support. They need to know that the voters out there want this. And not, you can't just throw up your hands and do nothing. Because if you throw up in your hands and do nothing, you'll get nothing in return. And that really is the problem.
Yeah.
So you have to do something, and you have to make your voice heard.
Yep.
Now, I'm not the kind of guy who thinks stand around holding signs necessarily is the most important thing on planet Earth. I'm much more about direct communication with the members and with the leadership. You know, one-on-one communication, to me, is 1,000 times more effective than standing around holding a sign for a bunch of other people who are equally powerless, because John Boehner is not driving by your post office or your town hall.
Right.
Other people who feel powerless are doing that. And so you're holding up the sign. They may or may not agree with you. But you need to be talking to the people who actually are in power in order to effect some kind of change here.
Yeah, I agree with you. And look, the thing about holding up the signs, I mean, it has its place. It has its time. It does, you know, rally and confirm those who are like-minded. And let's face it, most people in this country do believe in conservative principles. In fact, most, quote, liberals, not the leadership or the officials, but, you know, people who vote for liberals, if you break it apart and present truly conservative principles one at a time to them, as opposed to as a platform, as a Republican idea, they agree. And they even identify the same problems that we do. So there's a confusion here that's intentionally sowed by the duopoly to get us fighting against each other instead of turning on them. But the thing about it is, you know, I remember, you know, I was at a few of the Tea Party rallies in Washington. I was there at the one where it was about 1.7 million people from all over the country. It was a pretty big showing, but it was barely reported by the media, and then they were appropriated. And here's the thing. In reality, the best thing to do is don't carry any signs to Washington, D.C. In fact, unless you have reason to come here for business or convention or something like that, I would strongly advise you just ignore this town. Don't come to the Imperial City. Don't voice your opinion here. Ignore Washington. Deal with it at your local level. Deal with your rep at home. Talk to other reps in their districts. Don't give Washington any mind, because the fact is that we spend so much time focusing on Washington, we embolden these people. I think they thrive on our alleged opposition. So, you know, cut it off and work in what's truly the Federalist system in the Federalist level. And actually, Tex and I, you and I were talking earlier about terminology and newspeak, and about how sometimes words that we use in their conservative original intent are a little twisted these days. You know, like federalism. You want to take a stab at explaining federalism to our audience?
Yeah, federalism is the system of allocating power to the individual states. That was sort of the original idea of the United States, and, you know, dang it, it was a good idea, and we ought to get back to that. But it's called federalism, which is the devolution of power to the states away from the federal government. Now, statism is, oddly enough, the movement of power away from the states and to the federal government. So I don't know who came up with these words, but it's like you're looking at a mirror with them. So statism is the bad thing where the federal government does everything, and federalism is the good thing where the states do everything. And I don't know who came up with these words, but clearly we need to have a committee meeting about it and start sorting this thing out, because I think sometimes the listeners get a little confused about that.
Yeah, well, and it's very true, and I think that this is a very important thing, and language is obviously an imperfect expression of ideas. Okay, it is not the best tool, which you can learn dramatically when you're trying to speak a foreign language. If it's not native to you and you haven't been immersed in it, you will put words together in the syntax and structure with which you're familiar. And when you translate them to other language, they come off a little funny. And most of us, you know, who don't travel overseas or talk to people in their native tongue, we hear them attempting to speak to us in American English, and we find it kind of cute when they screw it up. It works the same on the other side, and that's because there are nuances and differences. And over time, languages develop, especially English. English, primarily because of the vast territory that it encompassed when at the height of the British Empire, the sun never set on the British Empire, you know, from India to the penal colony in Australia to the colonies here. It was everywhere. And it all developed slightly differently. You know, a lot of people say, you know, in America we only speak English. Well, that's not really true. We speak American. It is a variant of English, but a lot of the words that we use here would play very differently in England. For example, and this is one that comes off kind of strangely, right? We call condoms rubbers, right? Well, in England, they call erasers rubbers. So you can see how a conversation with two people who speak the same base language could end up with a very odd sentence if you use the word, the word rubber. If an English person is talking to you about a rubber in the context of drafting or writing something, it would make perfect sense to them, and you would wonder, what does a prophylactic have to do with the conversation? So that's the development, over time. But the thing we have to remember is that when we look at the original documents that established our Federalist system, we have to understand those words within the context of the 18th century that they were written in. Some of the biggest problems are, for example, the Founding Fathers referred to the general government. They didn't refer to a national government. It wasn't expected to be a national government. It was the general government, meaning that they knew that there were 13 state governments that were sovereign, that ceded some of their power and enumerated it in the Constitution. There are 18 things Congress can do. There's like 10 things Congress cannot do. And if there's any ambiguity about that, there's the 10th Amendment, which says that if it isn't clearly spelled out that they can do it in the Constitution,
then it's
preserved for the people
in the state. If that hadn't been added, they never would have been approved by the state.
Exactly. So there, you know, the Federalist system was already in play before the Constitution was written. In fact, the entire convention to draft the Constitution was a Federalist structure, and that's what we have to get back to. What, you know, sometimes adversity is a wonderful tool because it teaches you things you've forgotten, and we have forgotten our system. We've forgotten federalism. We've forgotten our inheritance. We've forgotten what men and women have fought and bled for. And that's why we are where we are. And it's time for you to reclaim that, and you reclaim it by educating people one at a time. And one of the tools you can use to do that, you can go to our show, Blog Talk Radio page, and you can click on the download link. You can right-click on it and download an MP3. And that's a pretty powerful thing. It doesn't cost you anything. You download the MP3. It takes like 2 seconds. You can stick it in an email and send it to a friend and say, hey, just check this out. Maybe there's some ideas here that you aren't familiar with that I think that you'd find interesting. You can burn it on a CD. But get the information out there. And remember that nothing works better than personal contact. So just touch people one at a time. And sometimes we forget this, especially in our Twitter speed, multimedia infotainment culture with instant gratification and downloads and stuff. Nothing works like personal contact. And, you know, most of us.
And you have a greater ability now to personally contact your congressman and the people who represent you than at any time in American history.
Exactly. We have more power and more tools at our disposal, and yet we are more cut off and less involved than we've ever been, which is exactly what the oligarchs and the duopoly want. So do the opposite, you know. And think of it this way. Most of us in this country identify as Christians. We're celebrating Christmas. And even if you're, you know, not a firm believer culturally, you probably, you know, celebrate Christmas and Easter. And, you know, stop for a minute and think, how did this religion get here after 2,000 years? Well, it started with Christ preaching to individuals. And then he picked out of those disciples, he picked 12 to be his chief apostles, right? And then he sent them to the entire globe to preach. And they preached one person at a time. They evangelized one at a time. And here we are 2,000 years later, and there's over 2 billion people on the planet who ascribe to his teachings, and, you know, just about everybody else has, to some degree, you know, heard of it. So that's how you get things done. That is the tools that we've been given. So reach people one at a time and let them know, hey, look, what you're hearing on the news, it's garbage. You know, this thing with John Boehner, you know, you realize 10 Republicans didn't vote for him. It wasn't enough to displace him, but here's why they did it. And, you know, we need to thank them. We need to support them. We need more people like that. That's how you get things done. And understand the meaning. I mean, the Constitution is not a terribly long document. It's not difficult to understand, and we have the kind of annotated companion, the Federalist and Anti-Federalist Papers, and we've got dictionaries from the time. We can look up what the words mean. You know, when the Founding Fathers used the word regulate or to make regular, it had no similarity to how the government uses, quote, the word regulation today. Today, the word regulation really is used to mean intervention and control, as opposed to make a natural thing adhere to its natural function, meaning the natural free market. And I know there's a lot of debate, like, well, you know, are free markets good, are they bad, blah, blah, blah. It's besides the point. The natural free market is something that occurs when two individuals, both with free will, voluntarily engage in a transaction of an exchange. That's what a free market is. It's not an abstract concept. It's actually people making decisions. And the way that it's, you know, regulated today is to control the free market. Well, that's not what's supposed to happen. To make regular means to prevent undue influence and unjust interference into the free market, and that's what the purpose of the government is. It's not what it's being used for, but that's what it's supposed to do. So learn the meaning of these words and put them forward, because if you want to put conservatism forward as our foundational basis for how we order our lives together, you got to know what it is, and you've got to be able to communicate it, and then you got to hold people accountable to it. That's the system that we have, because if you abdicate your responsibility as a citizen in this system, then you don't deserve this system of liberty and freedom, and the experiment that can man govern himself would have failed because of your failure, and therefore we will need to go to some kind of absolutist system, because clearly we are not suitable to making up our own minds and our own decisions. You can't have freedom if you don't exercise it.
Well, absolutely, Rex. And, you know, I think we've been focused on a lot of, you know, sort of defeats and failures for the conservative movement here recently. You could say the election of Barack Obama was a defeat of conservatism, but really the nomination of Mitt Romney was the defeat of conservatism, I think, and the election was sort of irrelevant to that. But following that, we had the fiscal cliff debate, where, as the Congress has said, they prevented taxes from going up on 99% of the American people, and therefore they did a great job because taxes only went up on people making $450,000 or more. Except the payroll tax went up 2% on everybody. Oops.
Yeah.
So that went up on 100% of people.
Yeah. Well, let's be clear about a couple of things. First of all, no, it didn't actually go up 2% on everybody, because remember, it's capped at like 114,000. So it's punitive to those who earn less. Just keep that in mind, because if you make 150, right, if your AGI, your adjusted gross income is 150, then basically you're avoiding that tax on $36,000, where the guy who only makes $100,000 is paying it on 100% of his income. So it's actually punitive to those who earn less. It's a regressive tax. So all this, you know, we need a graduated system because those who earn more need to pay more. Well, this actually punishes those who earn less. And, Tex, you're absolutely right. It is 2%.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say it is 2%. But as far as an increase, it's 48%, because you just went from 4.2% Social Security to 6.2%, which is a 48% increase in the rate of taxation. That's huge. And then what most people didn't realize until they got their paycheck and were like, how come it's, you know, $60 less? Well, because of the payroll tax. And you go, well, okay, but that's a contribution into my Social Security pension. Well, Tex, is that true? I mean, since 1968, can we consider any of these FICA taxes as contributions?
I would not say so, because they just kind of all go into the general fund. So it's like a piggy bank with a bunch of slots all over it. You know, one in the snout, one in the back, one in the boot, one in the behind.
In the ass.
It all goes the same place.
It all ends up in your ass. Basically, it's your payroll taxes are an income tax under another name, and it's a regressive income tax, which makes it even worse. And what most people don't think about, because when you get your pay stub, if you're a W-2 employee, you see your FICA contributions. It's 6.2% now going to Social Security, you know, and then you pay another 1.45% for Medicare, right? But your employer is paying the same thing. Your employer is paying 6.2% of your paycheck into Social Security and another 1.45% into your Medicare, and it's the same thing.
And it's still not balanced.
And it's still not balanced. And if you're self-employed, guess what? You're on the hook for both ends. So you're paying, you know, 12.4% Social Security and 2.9% Medicare. And the real screwy part about it is that when they, you know, cut the contribution from 6.2 to 4.2, and everybody got this, you know, stimulus tax break, employers did not get any such thing. They were ponying the whole amount the whole time. Now you would think, well, I don't care. That's the employer paying the tax, not me. Wrong. That's a cost of that employer hiring you. That is money that would be that is considered allocated towards the cost of employment. But instead of the cost of employment going into your pocket, it is, without you ever seeing it, taken out of your hands and sent to the government. Basically, these arcane laws force your employer to be a tax collector for the government, and he's uncompensated for it. That's the fundamental problem. And on top of that, you got the Obamacare taxes. Go ahead.
Well, and this gets down to what happened with this bill. It was supposed to be the, you know, spending cut bill and tax increase bill, which would help prevent the fiscal cliff because it would address the deficit, not necessarily the debt, but at least address the deficit. Well, it was a tax bill, definitely, but it didn't do anything about spending. Oh, wait, it actually increased spending. I forgot. So spending went up again.
Yeah.
So it's a complete defeat all around on every single conservative, whatever you wanted to see out of this thing, you just completely lost, right?
Yep.
And it's a failure of leadership. How did this happen? It's a failure of leadership. But have no fear, because now that the taxes have been enacted, they're going to sit down and engage in a serious discussion about cutting this spending and getting our government spending under control. Because Barack Obama, when he signed this, promised that now he's ready to get serious about government spending. Except they're not.
They're not
going to do any of that. Look, this
they're
country
not.
Has essentially three problems, right, with the economy and with government spending. First, the economy's not growing, right? So if you grow the economy, you can get out of this situation because all the debts become affordable. Well, if your economy is not growing, they become increasingly less affordable. And enacting tax increases on everyone and taking $60 or whatever it is out of their checking accounts, with your increase in the payroll tax that will affect everyone, is $60 they don't have to spend. That's $60 that goes to Washington to spend on whatever the heck it wants. Well, so your economy is not doing good. Then you have the other problem that all the spending in Washington gets an annual cost of living adjustment. So it increases every year. Right?
Automatically.
Yes, automatically it increases. So guess what? 12 months from now, you're going to be in a worse situation because the deficit is going to be larger because they did a cost of living increase. So the spending is going to be more, and they're going to need more of your money. And you're just spiraling the drain, just shrinking forever and ever. And the way this works, it's like you started out and you said, you know what? I just want to buy a Chevy. You know, I just want a Chevy car, something simple to get me around town, right? But next year, you said each year you have to have a cost of living adjustment. So now I'm going to get a Toyota, okay? And then the next year, now I'm going to get a Lexus, which is also a form of Toyota, but whatever. And then after that, now I got a Porsche. And next year, well, I guess I have to buy a Lamborghini. Honey, we're going broke. Buying all these new cars every year. Why do we have to buy a Lamborghini? Oh, because last year we said we were going to increase our spending on cars by this much. Why do we agree to do that? Why don't we stop doing that? Oh, well, we can't. So these cost of living adjustments are drowning the economy.
Mm-hmm. They're not cost of living adjustments anyway. I mean, they have nothing to do with the cost of living. It's the CPI-U or the CPI-D or whatever number that they decide to use. These things are all fabricated, gerrymandered, you know, rigged numbers. But you're absolutely right. These things are absolutely devastating. This fiscal cliff was a fiscal bluff, okay? It was a bluff to create political theater, and like we told you for months on this show, they were going to pull it out of their asses at the last minute to let you know that they came to a deal and they saved the day through bipartisan negotiations and blah, blah, blah. Well, the fact is,
bipartisanship
they already made that.
Works.
Yeah. Well, it works to screw you because this deal is absolutely a con job. You're paying more taxes, they're spending more money, and they've actually pushed us off the fiscal cliff that they said they were going to avoid with this deal that they made, and you watch. They're going to shove you even further down here. You're going to go crashing on the rocks because that's their game. And who do you blame for this? Well, you can take a look at Barack Obama, right, because he's obviously got the loudest voice being the head of one-third of the federal government and singly elected to that position. And you can look at Congress, where you've got the House, 435, and you got the Senate, 100, and you're responsible for the Senate because it is popularly elected these days. So you can take a look at the leadership there, Reid, right, and McConnell. But ultimately, you have to understand the Constitution. And the Constitution demands that all bills of revenue originate in the House, which gives that power solely to the Speaker of the House, little Johnny Boehner. So you got
to
hang
but they wrote that a long
name.
Time ago. Nobody pays attention to that stuff anymore.
Yeah, exactly. It's outdated. It's archaic. So in all reality, and Republicans, you've got to
get their rubbers out on that one, I think. They're going to take their rubbers out on that one.
Yeah, got to be careful. But, yeah, well, I mean, look, maybe I would really wish that they would. I mean, what we need here is a major prophylactic intervention. These people need to be shut down and put back into the little cage so that they can't do these things. But Republicans got to get honest about this, okay? It's your fault, okay? Because it's easy to watch, you know, the cheerleaders on TV like Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and all that kind of stuff where they're going to be like, Obama's the big socialist, blah, 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 blah. Boehner is responsible for this. Boehner is the number one Republican. He's the Speaker of the House. It's a very powerful position. I would argue in many cases outside of the war powers, which are illegally used these days, the Speaker of the House is potentially more powerful than the President. It's a very powerful position.
Right. But you've missed the most recent narrative. I was puttering about the House the other day and had in the background the news on, but I was on, you know, I was going off-brand, which I guess they're all off-brand now that Fox News is complete junk. It was either CNN or MSNBC. It may have even been Bloomberg. But someone was saying, it was a lady, and I forget whom, but she said the the Speaker of the House isn't worth a bucket of warm spit these days, to sort of paraphrase a fellow Texan, John Nance Garner, who once said that about the vice presidency. So apparently, now that John Boehner is Speaker of the House and Republicans have control of the House, being Speaker of the House is no longer worth anything. Well, I would stipulate that if John Boehner is your Speaker, that's probably actually true, because it's not the Speaker of the House that isn't worth a bucket of warm spit. I think it's John Boehner and his leadership that isn't worth a bucket of warm spit in this economy, because we're talking about the failures that we've had up to this point for conservatism with the nomination of Mitt Romney. Well, actually, Mitt Romney never got nominated to be the Republican candidate because they stole it, but that's
the acclamation, the acclamation of Mitt Romney as the candidate.
Yes.
It wasn't a nomination, acclamation.
Yes. Then we had the fiscal cliff negotiations, which actually turns out there's another fiscal cliff coming up because they never did address spending. And apparently people are talking about addressing this through the raising of the debt ceiling.
Ooh.
Okay. Well, let me tell you how this thing's going to go. The debt ceiling's going up already. Okay. So whatever you see on TV, you know, all this kind of stuff, sorry, that's not going to happen. This is more Sturm und Drang to get you riled up and all that kind of stuff. The debt ceiling's going up. And there's really nothing that they can do about it because, A, how is this debate been phrased, framed in the minds of the American people. Okay, it's a binary system. On the one hand, if you raise the debt ceiling, the government profligate spending goes on from now until eternity without any break or control over how much there is. Okay, and this is financially ruinous for the United States. So don't raise the debt ceiling. But if you don't raise the debt ceiling, guess what? Wall Street is going to start downgrading U.S. debt. We're going to start having to pay more and more to borrow money from the Federal Reserve, which is the old money trust, and that is going to tank the economy. So you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. But all the financial interests are going to descend on Washington, and they're going to tell you that if you don't raise the debt ceiling, it's going to be the worst thing that ever happened. Real leadership would negotiate the terms under which you raised the debt ceiling. And I believe
some
you have a
actual
clip of a very bright thing.
Yeah. You just paraphrased someone that we both like, someone who understood the power of the speakership. And, you know, whoever made that comment, I don't know which woman you're referring to, but, you know, she basically said the speakership is not worth spit. Well, I agree with you. It's this speaker, not the speakership, because remember the demonic...
You know her. She had the two ears and the nose.
Yeah, that one.
Bilaterally symmetrical. You've seen her.
Yeah. The demonic Newt Gingrich, right? Remember? He shut down the government. How come Clinton couldn't just stop him? Oh, that's right, because the power to do that is in the speakership. It's not in the presidency. Designed to be that way on purpose in order to create checks and balances. And Newt Gingrich shut the government down, which just, you know, they tried to demonize him for it, but he stuck to his guns and he brought Clinton to heel. Okay? Boehner is deathly afraid of confronting Obama with this. And now, of course, we are facing a shutdown in less than 2 months, and little Johnny boy is such a pussy, he's going to be crying and figuring out a way to avoid that from happening because he doesn't want to be demonized as the guy who shut down the government. Well, what you just said, Tex, you channeled Newt Gingrich, because this is Newt, who, as Speaker, really used his power to affect changes towards conservative principles. This is him talking about the upcoming debt ceiling thing, and I believe this was on Joe Scarborough, who, interestingly enough, since Mitt Romney has disappeared.
Are we going
Joe
to Scarborough Fair?
Yeah, we're going to Scarborough Fair. Joe has been more deferential to Newt lately, which I know that when Newt's sitting across from you, it's kind of hard to resist. And obviously, you know, little Mika, you know, New World Order Brzezinski psycho is, you know, just a shill for Obama. But in this clip, we don't hear that. I did put the entire 28 minutes that Newt was on there with Bob Woodward and Michael Steele on the Tex and Rex page. So go to the Tex and Rex show on Facebook, and the entire clip is there. But here's Newt. It's about a 30-minute clip on what the Republicans are going to do with this debt ceiling discussion.
They've got to find in the House a totally new strategy. I mean, confronting, for example, everybody's now talking about, okay, now comes the debt ceiling. I think that's, frankly, a dead loser.
Yeah.
Because in the end, you know what's going to happen. The whole national financial system is going to come into Washington by television and say, oh, my God, this will be a gigantic heart attack. The entire economy of the world will collapse. You guys can't be responsible. And they'll cave.
There it is. They'll cave. He's absolutely right. And,
yeah,
and what you said.
That's a done deal.
You said, what you said was correct. I mean, first of all, as much as I would like for the debt ceiling not to go up, I mean, look, I'm of two minds of this. Part of me wants to say, you know what, screw it. Do the right things and let's suffer the pain now, crash the system, and suck it up. The other part says, no, you know what, let's do it in a more managed and phased-in approach, which I think is prudent if you actually have people who are really going to do it. And like you said, what you do is you actually tie in true fiscally conservative, sound money, true economic reforms with the debt ceiling increase, and you hand it to them that way. That's the only way to do it. And I think that's the entire reason, first of all, I mean, other than in times of war, this government is not supposed to go into debt. Of course, we've been in perpetual undeclared war since 1942, so they keep increasing it. But the fact is that they shouldn't be going into debt at all. But the debt ceiling debates are because they put a cap on it so that it couldn't just be, you know, unlimited. But obviously now they're trying to find ways so that we don't have to have these uncomfortable discussions about the debt ceiling every 6 months to just, you know, let's just make it a free-floating thing. You borrow as much money as you want. But that's clearly a disaster. But they need to tie in real cuts. And, I mean, this whole sequester thing, right, this cliff that we were supposed to go off, is such a bluff. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, and I'll have to double-check the numbers, but I think that the sequestration was only going to cut $109 billion across the board, $109 billion. Okay? Now, for most of us, that's a shitload of money. But, you know, when you're talking about a $3 trillion, that's $3,000 billion budget, $109 billion is just nothing. It won't even affect any change. And that's what's coming up as a discussion in 2 months. You know, we have to avoid the sequester because it's across the board. And, of course, you know, the Republicans don't want their and don't confuse it when they talk about military spending. They're not talking about soldiers, and they're not talking about soldiers' benefits. They're talking about corporate transfers to the defense contractors. And, of course, the Democrats want all their social programs because that's how they buy their constituency.
Well, let's clarify a little something. Go back in the Wayback Machine. And, you know, the debt ceiling fight, where did it have its origins? Well, kind of started back in the early 20th century, so 1913-ish back then, came around World War One, sort of waived it, came back again in the 30s with some of the New Deal legislation because you had to go into massive debt. And as we recall, Hans Morgenthau was saying at the time, like, this massive debt, this Keynesianism crap, does not work. And he testified to Congress that Keynesianism is a complete failure, and he was himself a Keynesian. And we as a nation decided, screw Morgenthau and the School of Hard Knocks and actual practicality in our lying eyes. Keynes says it works, so let's keep doing it. But long about the 70s, this congressman, who you may remember, he looks like he may have been an alien or somehow related to David Bowie. Definitely very interesting cranial structure.
Ziggy Stardust?
Congressman
Ziggy Stardust?
Yes, Congressman Ziggy Stardust, the congressman from outer space. No, this was Dick Gephardt in 1979. He implemented what was called the Gephardt Rule, which was whenever you passed a budget, no matter how much it blew out the budget or blew up the deficit, that the debt limit was automatically raised. Because if you voted for the spending, you were, in essence, automatically saying that you were voting for an increase in the debt limit, right? So it was a non-issue when Gephardt was there. Okay, well, when did that change, Rex? Can I give you a quick guess?
When did that change?
Yeah, when did that change? What do you think? Just process of elimination. When do you think that kind of thing would have changed? Gephardt puts it in 79. When would it change?
I'm guessing 1980.
No. 1995.
What?
The answer was 95.
Wait a minute, but 1980 was when we had the conservative revolution. What's the big deal with 95?
I don't know. It was the middle of the 90s. I think Green Day, didn't they have an album then or something? It was terrible.
Yeah.
That was Newt Gingrich. And the first thing, one of the first things they do is they waive the Gephardt Rule. And so the reason we have these fights over raising the debt limit now is as a way of using it as a bludgeon to try to control federal spending. But who gave us this bludgeon? Newt Gingrich did. Because
Wait,
they were
what?
Just going to make it automatic.
So you're saying that there's another thing that Newt Gingrich did as Speaker of the House to control and check the executive?
Impossible to believe.
That is just crazy. I'm so glad that those hardworking Republicans like Lightness Loafers, Lindsey Graham, and little Ricky Santorum, and Joe Scarborough, and, of course, crying tan beef jerky John Boehner, got rid of Newt, because you can't do stuff like that. You got to let the president spend as much money as he possibly wants. He knows what's best. He won, after all, right?
Well, as John Boehner is about to prove, yes, he can if Boehner is the speaker, because Boehner will let him, and if anybody gets in the way of federal spending, Boehner will get rid of them one way or another, even if they happen to be Speaker of the House at the time. Because the last thing Boehner likes is conflict.
Yeah, we can't have that.
For a principle.
You get invited to less parties if you're, you know, controversial or zany.
Exactly. Yep.
So, you know, go ahead.
Well, anyway, I was just going to say that this is the nature of this debate and where it came from, because Congress was doing this stuff automatically. Now we have the ability to use this as a valve to control federal spending. So the thing is not that the debt limit won't be raised. The negotiation is not this binary thing that's being set up by the media, and thus the vast majority of the American people don't understand the issue. They think they have a Hobbesian choice. Both choices are equally bad, but they're going to make the not raising the debt ceiling the worst one, and so people are going to say, oh, we'll just raise it. What you really want to negotiate are the terms under which you increase it. And is John Boehner out there laying out a case stating that we will increase the debt limit if we do this, that, the other, if we adjust the cost of living increases, if we change this program? I have been speaking with, as Newt Gingrich used to do, I've been speaking with all these learned people from outside Washington who understand these problems, and they have some ideas. As Mitt Romney would say, that's zany. They have ideas about how to effectively control this without hurting people on Social Security, without blowing the deficit out, in order to rein in this federal spending so that we don't tank the entire economy. But they're not setting up a debate based on those terms. They're just saying you have these two Hobbesian choices, both of which are equally bad. But if you don't just go along with federal spending from now until eternity, you know, the United States, as we know it, is over or whatever. Remember what they were saying if Barack Obama got elected, that we're now going to be a socialist republic and all this other kind of stuff, right? Okay, so some of you guys are still there. The socialism came in the 30s, really. Actually, it started coming in like in the 19-teens. You know, you look at that Franklin Roosevelt, some of this stuff started coming in then. So we've been under socialism for quite a while. The thing is, you got to roll the clock back, and that's going to be difficult to do. But one of the things that they're talking about is, and here's the bludgeon, okay? So they can claim a lot of things and say that, well, you can't stop us, so you don't really have the control to shut off the lever of increasing federal spending because they're going to claim under the 14th Amendment, right? So what does the 14th Amendment say, and why does it say it? Well, the 14th Amendment, this is Section 4 of the 14th Amendment, and for those of you who recall from grade school, the 14th Amendment is always one of the most annoying ones because it's really long and it's got five sections. You're like, oh, God, now I got to know all the different freaking sections of this thing. So this was the omnibus bill of its day, I guess, that came through. And Section 4 says the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, ... shall not be questioned. So what they're saying is that Congress will just go ahead and spend the money, and whether there is a debt ceiling approved or not, they will just go ahead and proceed as if it was automatically raised. This is kind of the current plan. So what you want to do is negotiate the terms under which the debt ceiling is increased. Now, I don't agree that they get a complete walk on this, because you do have that all bills of revenue have to originate in the House. This is where your man on the scene, John Boehner, comes in, because he comes up with some omnibus legislation that allows this to go through, and then you probably won't have to use the 14th Amendment's provisions. And why does the 14th Amendment say that? Well, it's because when the Civil War came up, the United States couldn't really afford it at the time. Basically, it just lost half of the country. And it didn't have the money to raise the army, so they came up with a system of printing up greenbacks, which is unconstitutional. But if the greenbacks were redeemable in gold or silver, they figured it was okay. But everybody thought it was just counterfeit money, and they were talking about the continental dollars, because we had the same experience during the Revolutionary War. And so in order to take care of that problem, they would not have been able to get an amendment through on this issue of the debt on its own, and thus they rolled all this stuff up into the 14th Amendment, and that's why it sits there, because they had just created paper money for the first time in really American history.
1690.
Yep.
In guess where? Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Woohoo! Another good thing to come out of that place.
Yes. So,
yeah.
There you go. So they're already stating if you don't raise it, we have a constitutional thing, so you conservatives, you like the Constitution, right? So we have a constitutional thing that we're going to cite to you so that we can increase it, and now what are you going to do?
Yeah, well, we need the constitutional amendment to just make them all illegal. But look, what you said is very, very relevant, okay? I mean, we know it's going up, right? So you know it's going to go up. But adjusting for how, you know, under what terms will you vote for the increase that the executive wants, which is really not the executive. Ben Bernanke tells Obama what to do, and the governor of the New York branch of the Federal Reserve tells Bernanke what to do, and, of course, the private owners of the Federal Reserve tell that guy what to do. But you could put things in there such as saying, we're not going to spend money on useless things. For example, part of the fiscal bluff sends $430 million to Hollywood under special expensing rules. It sends $331 million for railroads. $222 million go to Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands through returned excise taxes collected by the government on rum. $70 million goes to NASCAR. $59 million for algae growers. I think some 4 or $5 million or something for electric motorcycle manufacturers. Like, who the hell wants to buy an electric motorcycle?
You mean I can make money off the sink in my bathroom?
Yeah, that kind of run. not bathtub gin. But these are the ridiculous things that you want to remove, and you say, okay, you know what, we're going to give you this debt ceiling thing. We don't want a default, blah, 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 blah. Let's cut some of the spending, and all of the spending cuts are not going to be devastating to regular folks, and that's really the key. But that's not going to happen if, A, you're not educated and you're not aware, and, B, if all you do is bitch to other people who already think like you about it. You need to explain it to those who don't know, who merely hear the sound bites, and it says that their taxes won't go up until they get their first paycheck in 2013 and go, hey, wait a minute, how come all this money's gone? They don't know that all this money went to special interests and pork for the senators and the congressmen's special interest constituencies. All they're going to do is frighten you to death with the fact that we're going over the next fiscal cliff. It'll be another fiscal bluff. It'll be even bigger than this one, because they're going to tell you that if the debt ceiling doesn't go up, we're going to default, everything's going to crash, all your 401k and IRA savings will disappear, and your house will be worth nothing, and it'll be, you know, cats and dogs living together. It'll be just absolute chaos. And then, of course, the sequester, just that $109 billion that is automatically going to be cut across the board is going to be so devastating that the government will be in such bad shape that, you know, the veterans won't be provided with services and Social Security checks might not go out. Well, that's not true. That's a complete and total lie. Obama lied about that. Boehner let him get away with it. That's not going to happen. Okay, $109 billion is nothing. I mean, we're running a $1 trillion deficit. Bernanke is pumping $85 billion a month into this system to keep it floating. I think it's like he's buying $45 billion of U.S. treasuries, and he's doing another $40 billion of mortgage-backed securities. So this entire house of cards is being propped up by the actions of the Federal Reserve, and they're going to freak you out over this debt ceiling thing. Look, the only thing this debt ceiling thing does, right, is it refinances the debt. It allows you to borrow more in order to pay the interest on what you've already borrowed. Okay? This is sort of like when you bet, say, on the Redskins and the Seahawks win, and you borrowed the money from Vinny down the street at 2 points a week, and now you don't have the money because you were so sure the Redskins were going to win, which would have been kind of cool, but they didn't. And now you're in the hole and you don't have the money, and guess what? Vinny keeps tacking 2 points on every week. And then you go deeper and deeper into debt, right? And he keeps you on the hook, and his plan is to keep you on the hook enough where you're always on the hook, but you're always giving him a little something to keep it going. And you'll end up paying him an interest far more than you ever borrowed from him, and guess what? You still owe him the nut. And at some point, he's going to get pissed off with you because you're going to be like, man, I just keep paying you this interest and the debt keeps getting bigger. I'm never going to get out of this hole. I can't. I'm going to have to go bankrupt. And he's going to tell you, okay, you don't have to pay me, but you won't be working anymore.
If you don't
anymore.
Give Vinny a little something, you got to give him a little something-something, you know what I mean?
Anyway. A little something-something, or you just stop walking. You lose the ability to walk or see or have 10 digits. You know, it's the same principle.
And as Fletch said, the funny thing is, even after that happens, you still owe them the money.
Yep. And don't think for...
That's not gone, anyway.
Yeah, and don't think for a second, Tex, that it's any different with government. Because the single biggest syndicate of organized crime is the government. Now, that doesn't mean government is inherently bad. It's inherently dangerous, but it's not inherently bad. But when you allow corruption to run rampant and there is no check, and by the way, that check can occur in a number of ways. In a monarchy, you do have a check. You have a good monarch or a bad monarch, but you've always got an aristocracy of nobles who are the landed and propertied class who put a check on the king. This is exactly what we saw in Runnymede with the Magna Carta against King John. So even in a monarchy, there are checks, which is, you know, blood aristocracy. Well, our founding fathers didn't want a blood aristocracy here. They wanted a natural aristocracy, meaning those with the best talent and best capacity would rise up to those positions to check the government, and they gave us the tools by which to do it. So what we have right now is we have two major crime syndicates that operate as political parties. One of them is running right now the Chicago machine, which is also how the White House is being run. And the other one is running a greener, more inexperienced, kind of subservient criminal organization, that's the Republican Party. And both of them are essentially running a criminal government because we're being extorted. They are extorting from you, and don't think of it as money, because it's not, because you don't have any money. Take it out from your pocket, look at it. It's a Federal Reserve note. It is a debt. It is money that you owe. So you're already working for the loan sharks. It's a note, promissory note. You're already working for the loan sharks. It's just legal, okay? It's under cover of law. And what happens is that they want you on that treadmill. They want to keep plucking you without killing you, okay? And you're essentially spending 6 months of every year, half your year, half your time, half your labor, you are spending just merely to pay them interest on what your children's children's children owe. When you put it in that perspective, you realize how criminal this is. So when they start squabbling around the edges with $109 billion here and 2% increases there, just realize it's all window dressing. And you need to put a stop to it. And you have the power to put a stop to it, but it's the answer is not coming from Washington. And don't think that if only we elect one from our party, then everything will be okay. Because I can assure you, had Mitt Romney won, there would be no different deal on the table now. Okay? You think that things were negotiated, right? You know, Obama wanted to tax people at 250, and Boehner wanted to tax people at 1 million, and they compromised on 450, like that's some kind of number they pulled out of their asses. Okay? That's actually the inflation-adjusted number. Okay? Of who was already paying 39.6% tax in 2000, the Clinton tax rates. So they've made the number bigger, but more people have moved into that income level over time because of the devaluation of the dollar. This can be kind of complicated, but just think of it this way. Whoever was paying 39.6% on their top dollars in 2000, if you're making that income in today's terms, which is 450, you're paying that 39.6. But here's the thing. It's not exactly the same people. It's not this, quote, wealthy, right? Because, hey, Tex, is it possible that somebody who was just starting out in 2000 experienced some success and maybe is making 450 now? They weren't paying 39.6% 10 years ago.
Nope.
But they're now in that bracket because they succeeded. So what we need to do is punish them for being successful. They've created jobs. They provided for their family. Oh, yeah, but he has that big 5,000-square-foot house. Okay, I'm sure the carpenter that built that house and the bricklayer and the tradesman, they're not complaining that the guy bought a $5,000 house.
The other thing is, look, even if they take that money away, where does it go? It goes to the government. What are they doing with it? These guys, they know what they're doing? You know, oh, I'm going to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse. Oh, how many times are we going to go to this well? Okay, it's the waste, fraud, and abuse well. You know, how long are you guys going to be doing that? Some of that waste, fraud, and abuse, you guys support, and you know it's true. You're not going to eliminate your waste, fraud, and abuse. You're going to say that that's a legitimate use of the stuff, right? And you keep just adjusting it ever upward, ever upward. No matter how much money you raise in taxes this year, next year you're going to need more because of the way you've structured the deficit. The government will always grow, as Jefferson was saying. It's the nature of the government to increase its authority and for liberty to retreat. And it's the same thing with the financial system between the private enterprise and the public enterprise. The public enterprise always wants to increase because people in the public are like, I did not like that last hurricane, thunderbolt, raining fire, comet, you know, crash on highway, whatever it was, and now I want Washington. Why Washington? I want Washington to do something about it. And thus you transfer over more of your dollars, but just a little bit, to them to go fix whatever the problem du jour happened to be, when really the best thing to do would have been to just leave it alone, because sometimes bad things happen. And also you have states, and go to your state government to go fix these things, 50 experiments in democracy.
Go to your neighbor. Take care of your neighbor.
Yeah, what happened to that? Who's even talking about that?
Leave me the hell alone. Let me keep the fruits of my labor, and I will take care of my neighbor. All right? Now, if I'm incapable or I choose not to, okay, then maybe you say, okay, you know, the government has a role, my local government. Until they're incapable and choose not to, then we go to the county. Then we go to the state. Then we go to the federal government. But no, these days, the automatic answer right off the bat, hey, let's go get money to the feds. It's just like Mitt Romney said in the campaign. I want to go to Washington. That's where the money is. I want to get all the money. Right. Except the money's not there. It's all fabricated, and it's all the labor that you are
engaged
in every day.
Why do you want to go to Washington? Why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. So I want to go to Washington.
Oh, man. We could go around and around and around this. We got a little bit less than an hour of show left. Folks, call the number 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. We'd love to hear from you if you want to talk about Johnny Boehner, the fiscal bluff, the upcoming debt ceiling negotiation that Johnny's probably going to F up just like he does everything else. And we've also got this sequester, the $109 billion is going to be devastating.
I wanted to give my definition of government. Actually, this is Max Weber's definition of government, but I have a little addendum that I've added to it. So Max Weber, famous for sort of studying bureaucracy, that was kind of one of his contributions, but he said that the government, right, of a territory has a monopoly on the legitimate use of physical force or physical violence in the enforcement of order in a territory, right? So what that means is other people could use violence, the mafia, some nutjob who runs into a theater or whatever, but it's not legitimate. It's only legitimate when the state does it, meaning it's not illegal that the state does it. So that's what a government is. It has a monopoly on the legitimate use of physical force in the enforcement of order. And I would add, as a caveat, the extent of its territory is determined by the limits to which it can use that physical force to extort money from people.
Yep.
So if you live on an island somewhere, but yet someone has the legitimate use of physical violence in that territory enough that you pay taxes, otherwise, you know, they'll come get your stuff, then you are under that government, whether no matter what flag is flying, what your state song is or bird or whatever, if you're paying taxes to that group, that's your government.
Mm-hmm. Just to clarify, I mean, I agree with you. That's a good definition. And just so that people don't confuse, legitimate doesn't necessarily mean merely legal, okay? Because you can make law if you're the lawmaker or the lawmaking body. You can make law anything you want it to be. It's legitimate if that law comports with the natural law and is legitimate in the eyes of the consent of the governed, who are also, you know, conformed to that natural law. These things exist without our observance of them. And what we are supposed to do is make things as close to reality as possible rather than create artificial things like Federal Reserve notes, which are artificial, and give Congress powers that it doesn't have, because you cannot, as a citizen, a sovereign citizen, you cannot give your government a power that you do not have. We know, and this is throughout every society in human history, we know that legitimately you do not have a claim to the property of another. Okay, we know this. It's been, you know, even the most primitive societies understood you do not have a legitimate claim to the property of another. It's called theft, right? So you cannot give your government or your elected representative the power to lay claim on somebody else's property on your behalf, because that's stealing. Now, does that mean that government doesn't have the power or the right to tax? No, of course it does, okay, because once we agree that this is the government, then we all have to contribute in some fair manner, okay? And the Founding Fathers did give us a fair manner in the sense that they did not create any income taxes. Remember that they fought a war over a 3% tax from the monarch across the pond, okay? They created a system of indirect taxes. Wasn't until 1913, 100 years ago, folks, this is an important year because we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the income tax, the removal of state representation in the Senate by making the senators popularly elected, and the creation of that wonderful monster from Jekyll Island, the Federal Reserve. So this is how things have been eroded, and it's been a century in the making. If you think one election cycle is going to fix it, you are severely deluded. Which means don't wait until September 2014 to start getting busy about this stuff. Get everybody active and get them active now, and keep your eye on the Republicans. Tex, we got a little clip here from Judge Andrew Napolitano talking about how the Republicans, under John Boehner, are acting directly opposite to what they say they're going to do and opposite of what people elected them to do. Would you like to listen to it? It's about a three-minute clip.
Nah, let's not listen. No, of course,
yeah, I mean,
play it.
it's just a judge, you know. I mean, what does he know? All right, folks, we're going to play a three-minute clip, so Tex and I can take a swig of our various libations. And on the other side of the call, on this clip, we'd like to take your call, so please call in 646-649-1013. We'd like to hear what you have to say about all this stuff and have a meaningful conversation about what we can do to fix it. 646-649-1013. Here's Judge Napolitano, and I believe this is from Fox News.
It's supposed to be a compromise, but next year the government is going to be collecting $41 in taxes for every dollar it spends. Was that a good deal for Republicans, or should they have walked away? Fox News senior judicial analyst Judge Andrew Napolitano joins us live. So, Judge, last night we wound up with a cliff deal that taxes a bunch of people who are successful in this country and ultimately does not cut much in spending, which was the whole idea behind the Republican claim.
It was the whole idea behind the Republican claim. Stephen, good morning and happy new year to
you.
It's good to be back after a little holiday break. But Republicans caved last night, which is what is churning the acid in the stomach of a lot of us this morning who believe that Republicans were elected to shrink the government, to reduce spending, to stop the borrowing, and to lower taxes. And yesterday, in a rush to join the stampede started by the Senate and a drumbeat continued by the president since his reelection victory in November, they went along with raising taxes on the most productive and not getting any spending cuts in return. I mean, think about it this way. The president won. The president got a good majority, and he has his program, and he's faithful to his own values in November. Republicans also won in the House, and they won on the promise that they would do the opposite of what they did last night.
Right, and they have tried to, but with for instance, the Bush-era tax cuts, they were going to go away at the end of last year, which they did. And this fiscal cliff extends it for everybody except the most successful in the country. So had there not been a time limit on that, I'm sure the Republicans, you know, they'd still be working on keeping the taxes low and the spending cuts
were significant. It would have been nice if the Bush tax cuts had been permanent and didn't have the sunset, which was yesterday, theoretically. But to tax the most productive in society, to tax the wealthiest, to tax the people who produce the most will cause them to produce less. What will that do?
Right.
Fewer jobs for people that need jobs.
Well, you've heard the President of the United States. He said, you know, the new effective rate for people making $400,000 is going to be essentially 40% of your income will go to federal taxes. Now, do you think the President would consider 40% fair, or do you think that number would be north of that?
We fought a revolution against the King and the Parliament in Great Britain when taxes were at 3%. Now they want to take 40% from us. Do we work for the government or does the government work for us?
That's a good
point. These are profound questions that were not addressed in the rush to judgment last night. And when Republicans raise taxes, they lose. When they cut taxes, they win. They rejected that truism yesterday.
Well, perhaps round one went to the president for 2013, but the next round is going to be, you know, we've got the sequester looming in 2 months from now and the debt ceiling debate. That's going to come over again, and the Republicans actually have the bigger hammer this
correct.
Time.
Now, that is an opportunity for the Republicans to save the republic if they don't let the president borrow any more money. Just don't raise the debt ceiling and force him to live within his means like almost everybody watching this show now does. Don't spend more money than you take in.
That's
do
a
you
good
think
advice.
The government can do that?
I think they should.
Yes.
But do they? We just showed folks the number, and it's getting bigger. It's not getting smaller.
God bless you, Steve.
Wow. The word that jumped out for me there, Tex, was the judge said that they caved, which is the same word that Newt used. And I think that we can say that the speakership of John Crying Tan, Useless Beef Jerky Boehner is the speakership of caving to Obama. So while we can, you know, be pointing fingers and crying, Obama's ruining the country, blah, blah, Boehner is the one who's letting him do it.
Well, see, and they say, well, the American people will never let us do this because, you know, once they realize that whatever it is. Okay, well, here's the problem. All these debates are structured on the Democrats' terms. And so in the popular imagination, they're understood in the terms that the Democrats want. The Republicans do not have their own narrative as to what the consequences of these actions are and what an alternative plan would be. So the Democrats always present this very stark choice, and if the Republicans don't go along, they're destroying the country and everything. And perhaps under the structure of the debates and the underlying reality at the time, that may be true. But the Republicans and their leadership are not doing anything to affect that underlying reality, to change it, so that now we're having a discussion about raising the debt ceiling so that we can limit cost of living increases. Reduce, you know, expenditures in this area or that area because, you know, we don't need this stuff anymore or it doesn't make sense for us to be spending money on this. And there's thousands of things, tens of thousands of things in the government that don't make any sense. I mean, just a lot of programs that if you look at it by itself, you know, well, that program is so small it won't be a drop in the bucket in the budget. But there's hundreds and thousands of them. Yeah, that one thing won't matter. But in the aggregate, it's huge, you know. It's like, you know, having an intestine filled with parasites or something. You say, well, if I remove this one parasite, what difference is it going to make? Because there's all these parasites in there. Okay, yeah, so let's not go cure this problem then, because taking care of one won't take care of all of them. Okay, well, why doesn't somebody go in and take care of all of them? But the terms of the debate are not being recast by the Republican leadership so that the American people understand it. And this is one of the geniuses of Newt Gingrich when he was Speaker of the House is – everybody understood what was going on. Newt was on television all the time explaining this stuff. He had all his House leadership out there explaining this stuff, stating what they were doing, how the Democrats were trying to cast the debate, and why that was not the proper way to look at it, and how they had restructured the bills or the order of business or the rules in order to change that so that we would get some good outcome.
Yeah, correct. I mean,
go ahead.
Tex, you're so right, because, I mean, I went back, you know, I was looking for some stuff that Newt said. Whenever I search on the Google for, you know, Newt clips, they're always negative. You know, it's hard to find good stuff that Newt said, even though he does it a lot. So I went to the place that Newt put on the map, in my opinion. I went to C-SPAN. And looking back in the late 90s, the dude was there, like, every other day, if not every day, explaining this stuff. And the fact is that he even told Boehner specifically how to do this, right? He spelled out the power that this moron has that he doesn't use, either because he's incompetent and weak or because he's complicit. Either way, no thank you, Mr. Boehner. And what does Boehner keep doing? He keeps going straight to negotiation. He's going to go straight to negotiation on the debt ceiling. He's going to go straight to negotiation on the sequester. Well, he's got a bunch of other tools. First of all, appropriations, right? I mean, that's
got a lot of
the
tools,
principal
right.
job. The tool has a lot of tools. The principal job of the House is to appropriate. There's also oversight. They've got oversight committees and keep an eye on what's going on. Legislation, I mean, let's face it, that's their legislators, that's their primary function. And like you said, communication. It's not just the speaker. All 435 of them are supposed to be communicating with those whom they allegedly represent. And negotiation is the last tool. It's the weakest tool. It's the one that Boehner plays first. He sucks. And the only way you're going to get him to use these other tools is, A, let him know that you're aware of them, that you know the power that he has, that you know that this power can be used appropriately, and that you expect it to be used appropriately, because if things go wrong, tell him he can't point fingers at Obama and Reid. It's on him. It's on him, and it's on the Republicans who support him, whether it's because they caved at the last minute, for example, Michelle Bachmann voting for him in order to, you know, not ruffle his feathers because he has the power, or anybody else for any other reason. They are all responsible, and they need to take these principled stances that these 10 Republicans who didn't vote for Boehner took. They took a risk in going up against him. And we need to applaud them for that, and we need to encourage them more, because in the next 2 months we're going to see a lot of this garbage coming through, and the only way that you're going to stop it is if you make your voice heard, you tell other people about it, and you get them to go and fix it, because it can be fixed. I mean, even Steve Ducey, that glorified weatherman, who's usually a cheerleader, pointed it out to the judge, and that was why the judge closed that clip with, you know, God bless you, Steve, because he says, you know, you nailed it. More of us have to do that. That's your job. It's not just about listening to the Blog Talk Radio show or posting in Coalition of Freedom or on Facebook. It's about getting other people aware, involved, and letting them know that they need to make their voice heard, because ultimately these people have no jobs without our votes.
Absolutely, Rex. We're the people who are supporting them. We're the people who are doing this. And this is what, look, when they got rid of Gingrich back in 98, they were saying Gingrich is creating too much turmoil, he's getting all this negative press, and, you know, he's enraged the nation. I still remember that. What was it, Time? Was it Newsweek? I remember the cover. It was the Gingrich that stole Christmas.
Time.
The government shutdown. Time.
Yeah, Time magazine.
So he was out there creating, causing waves, right? This invigorated the conservative movement. People were happy to be Republicans. It didn't matter what the media was saying, but the Washington insiders, the John Boehners, the Bob Doles, all those people at the time wanted to just go along. Hey, we don't want this negative press. We don't want to have to fight for these ideas. We don't want to have to do all this kind of stuff. We need to just go along to get along and stop all the rancor, right? And as Chris Matthews, that idiot, said that when Gingrich was here, Washington became more feral. Okay, well, I like that kind of Washington, right? Where you're actually having fights over things that actually matter, whereas now we're having rhetorical fights over things that actually matter, but there's no real fight over it. The fight is over who can posture the best to get, you know, an outcome that basically harms the nation, as far as I'm concerned. So now we're seeing the end result of a speakership under Boehner. Let's say Boehner had been speaker back then. He would have just gone along with everything Bill Clinton wanted, and then it would still erode his power. So I say, if you're going to be in a leadership position, you might as well be fighting for the principles that you claim to stand for, because it invigorates and it strengthens your base, and it builds a foundation for success in the future. Because after Gingrich was ousted as speaker, Republicans said, we're the party of lower taxes and limited government and reining in government spending. Okay, so Reagan did the lower taxes part. He came in on the tax revolt. Strong national defense, lower taxes. That's kind of the writ large what Reagan did. Okay, Gingrich came in and he balanced the federal budget, which is something that Reagan was never able to do. And so we as Republicans were like, yes, that's the brand that I want, you know. This is why I support this party. And then you get George Bush Jr., comes in with the Karl Roves and all the new, you know, let's work within the system Republicans on Capitol Hill, and it becomes a big spending fest. And it destroys what the party is supposed to be. And now you have a party completely in crisis that is losing the support of its base left and right, that doesn't know what it wants to do, that it's essentially fighting an infernal civil war within the party for the heart and soul of what this party is really about. and Boehner's job is essentially on the line with this thing, and, you know, he may go come 2014. But here's the problem. Look, what you want to use the next 2 years for, if you're Republicans, is to set up a series of interesting policy debates that illuminate the problems of Washington, that highlight how the Democrats are perpetuating the growth of the federal government on your back and on the back of the economy and its recovery. Unemployment now is through the roof. What's causing it is this just enervating level of taxation that's hitting the economy, and uncertainty over regulatory uncertainty. So businesses can't plan if the regulations are uncertain, right? So that's a burden on the economy. Structure a series of votes around that issue and use those to lead yourself to further victories in 2014. Hopefully, you're creating solutions that actually are beneficial and that will work in an enlightened world, in a perfect world. These things would get passed, then the economy could start recovering, and, you know, we would all be doing well again, right? But
yeah,
the problem is, if you have a leadership under Boehner that continues on this path of rhinoism, even if we get passionate over the next 2 years and go out and hold signs and make phone calls and join campaigns, contribute our money, and we go elect Tea Party 2 or whatever the heck we call it that time, and you end up with Boehner still as Speaker, he's going to do the same thing that he did to the Tea Party, which is, A, try to co-opt it and destroy it, and then, B, find out who the real members are who actually believe this stuff and go eliminate their districts and not give them committee assignments and tell his man, you know, on the scene, Reince Priebus, not to contribute RNC money to their campaign so that they lose, so that he doesn't have to deal with them anymore.
Like Alan Watts.
Yeah. So it's no good to go out in 2014 and start, you know, raising a bunch of hell for the Republican Party if John Boehner is going to be the guy in the House of Representatives who's just going to shut them down again. And then let's throw another log onto that fire. The stupid rule at Tampa where the RNC decides who the delegates are. I mean,
sinister. Sinister.
What is with this party? It's over. This party is so over. I mean, they need fundamental change to fix this thing, or it's just gone. You know?
Well,
and they can sit there on TV and say whatever they want and give themselves attaboys and have the press say what a great job John Boehner did and everything, but the American people know the difference, and they're not going to go vote for that team anymore. That we'll find another team. And, yeah, maybe you have to have a rebuilding year in 2016 and you lose again. But at least, hey, then you'd have a chance of victory at 2020. But if you just go along to get along, even if you win in 2016, you lose because you'll have just another Republican with an R and an elephant who's a big rhino who's going to go along with this stuff again. And that's not change. Changing the symbolism and the letters doesn't mean anything. All that matters is if you change the underlying policy.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's face it, Boehner is not a change agent, and his idea and Prince Pubic's idea of winning is merely gaining a seat. They have no principles by which they need to win because they don't plan on changing anything. I mean, every time I try to talk to little Johnny Boehner, all I get from him is, Johnny, what, calm down, Johnny, you won. You're the speaker for two more. I know. Yes, I know people are expecting you to do conservative things, and you don't want to do conservative things, but quit being such a wuss and man up. I mean, you know, you need to sound a little bit more like our next caller. You need to have, you know, a big stick and big brass ones, and you need to implement the following policy.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of your women. That is good.
Now, that's a good policy. Crush your enemies, the Democrats. See them driven before you, okay? That's the kind of leadership that we need in order to put forth principles that work. Now, Conan, in some circles, is referred to as kind of a troglodyte. And speaking of troglodytes, we've got a caller from Coalition of Freedom on Facebook and Blog Talk Radio. Chris, you are live with Tex and Rex. How you doing?
Great. How you guys doing tonight?
Good. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Sounds like you're full of piss and vinegar as usual.
Someone
never quit.
Well, you know, The saddest day in my life, even though I knew it was coming, was re-election to Boehner. People do not understand how little or how much that man has done to give Obama everything he wants. I've been talking this, I don't know how many times I've said it, 10,000 times. I don't know how many times I said it, you know, coming into January 3rd. I know it's the holidays. You got to get a hold of your representatives. You got to tell these people we're behind you, but do not vote this man back in power because he will do nothing. And look what he's done. Look at this first thing he's done. And, you know, right before getting reelected, you got to be flipping kidding me. And with this gun thing coming down the pike, you know, with McConnell and McCain and Boehner, they're going to roll over, and I don't know what they're going to get out of this, but they're going to cause havoc with our guns. I don't know exactly everything. You know, I'm doing multiple shows on this. I'm on, like, Series 5. Yeah. Well, wrong people, folks. Wrong freaking people for this time in our country.
Well, you know, I mean, if you read history, you just look at certain points in history where they had the wrong people in charge. You know, they always said about Winston Churchill, if Winston Churchill had not existed, history would have had to invent him. Well,
yeah.
Not really, because the British Empire could have just gone completely under right then, and that would be the end of it, right? And the British person that everybody remembered would be Neville Chamberlain, like, wow, that was a terrible leader.
yeah.
You know, history didn't need to invent Churchill. Churchill happened to be the right man at the right time, but he fought for it because he was fighting for his vision and what he believed, right? We need somebody like that now. What we have are a bunch of Neville Chamberlain, and that's the problem.
Yeah. No, it's you're both absolutely correct. I mean, the fact is that well, first, there is a principle that is absolutely true, okay? You will always get the leadership that you deserve, okay? I mean, we got to be honest with ourselves, okay?
Yeah, but I didn't deserve these guys.
Yeah, no, we got to think about it. We really do, because we've been asleep, okay? We've been voting ours without even looking into who they are. Many people don't vote. 90 million didn't show up. We like lower taxes and we like lower spending, except if it's our favorite program. You know, cut all this other crap, but don't cut my Social Security. Cut all this crap, but don't cut my food stamps. You know, so we have to take responsibility because we're putting these people there through either our apathy, our incompetency and lack of research, our lack of involvement, or our complicity. So, you know, that happens. And the fact is, when you've seen good leaders, they rose to the occasion because they believed in a certain set of principles and they had a supporting constituency, even if they're not elected. Okay, a king who inherits his position cannot go to war successfully if he cannot muster his knights to go with him and he cannot extract the taxes needed from the people without causing such an excessive burden that you get a revolt. So you always have to have permission.
Don't forget the bankers. Don't forget the bankers in that one.
Well, that's the corrupting problem. It's the damn bankers. And you know, you're doing your shows, and I'd like, when I'm done, if you tell people when the next one is and where they can find it. You know, you're doing it on this the gun issue, which is pretty prominent. Obviously, Tex and I haven't touched on that too much, but, you know, you're doing a great job with that. But these two things go hand in hand. Because as they keep fleecing us and putting us more into debt and spending more money on crap that is useless and unproductive and dangerous to the tune of over $1 trillion a year, that's $1,000 billion, okay? At some point, there's going to be a revolt, and they want to make sure that we don't have arms. So these things go hand in hand, and unless you want to get into a fight with an oppressive enemy who is going to outgun you and outman you 100-1, okay, you need to fight now, not using guns, but using the tools that you have at your disposal. And that's what this is about. So when's your next show, Chris?
Tomorrow, 8:30 p.m., Coalition of Freedom on Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, it'll be posted like we always do, you know, whatever, 40, 50, 60 sites out there.
8:30 p.m. What time zone?
Eastern time.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. The thing that I've noticed walking down this journey, my son and I have done a lot of research historically, just all kinds of different directions. One of the things that I'm trying to do is profile. Well, I'm not trying to, I'm doing it. I'm doing the research, finding the cases where, law-abiding citizens have saved their own lives or other people's lives with guns. So I'm trying to, profile that because nobody does. I mean, there's somewhere between, 2.5 million times a year, 6,500 times a day, a legal citizen, uses a gun to defend themselves. You never hear that in the news, and it's amazing. And you look at the thing that I find, is a parallel, because I followed the Boehner thing. I did a show the other day on, on the New Deal, the new tax deal with all the pork, and followed the vote on Boehner. And I find this parallel. I find this caving in Republicans, even on these gun issues. And a lot of people don't want to admit it, but Republicans have been culpable in this situation for a long time. It took the Supreme Court, to actually stop politicians from abusing, from both sides, abusing the Constitution, and they had to rewrite some of the laws. And one of the things that's going to come down the pike on this thing, and I'll say the same thing that I said about Boehner, to people, you have got to get a hold of your representatives and your senators, and you have to tell them you're up for re-election in 2014. You better not cave on this issue, because anybody who has a half a brain in their head knows that any kind of forced registration is the first step, and it'll be one of the biggest moves. Well, I'm talking about forced registrations of all guns. I'm talking about, average person owns multiple guns. One might be registered because he's a concealed carry permit.
Right.
But, it's really important because, number one, it's unconstitutional for them to interfere with that. And there's actually laws that Lucas has done research on talking about the fact that, things that the ATF was doing and holding information on people was illegal, unconstitutional. They can't database that information. And you have to, it's just like everything else that we fight. You have to understand the Constitution. You have to understand the law. If you understand the Constitution and the law, you can go tell your Republicans who seem not to be able to read the damn Constitution as bad as the Democrats and tell them, you better not do this. You will be out in 2014. And then you've got to be willing to work for 2014 to get rid of these Bush-era rhinos. Got to get rid of these people, folks. They're the weakest, poorest example of a Republican I've ever seen in my life, this group.
Well, they're demoralizing the Republican voter. They're literally destroying the party itself. And then you look at that rule in Tampa, and it just said, hey, we don't want the grassroots around here either. We'll say what goes. And what apparently goes is collaborationism with the Democrats in a series of policies that we don't, as Republican voters, support. And this goes back to what I was saying earlier. They were touting Charlie Crist as this great Republican that we all should embrace. Republican from Florida. There's another big Republican from Florida that comes to everybody's lips all the time from the leadership. Jeb Bush.
Rubio.
So where do you... Rubio and Jeb Bush and Charlie Crist. Charlie Crist is a Democrat now. This leadership is on the other team. This goes back to what I was saying during the campaign. Like, well, if you don't vote for Romney, you're voting for, whatever. But if you're going into battle and you're on the front lines and you got your pike there or your rifle or whatever, battle you happen to be fighting, you're holding your shield and your longsword, and you turn around and the enemy's in your commander's tent giving the orders to you, turn around. You're not going to win that fight. And that's the problem we have, because this leadership claims to be the Republican leadership, but I don't actually believe it anymore. I think that the leadership of the Republican Party are essentially Democrats who are claiming to be Republicans because it helps them win elections in their district, but they are Washington insiders and thus Democrats to a large extent, because the Washington insider is the Democrat Party, right? That's what these people are. They're not Republicans, but yet they're all over the leadership. We got to get rid of these people. We've got to get another party. It's really that simple.
Yeah, I totally agree, Tex, that, and I've said this many times through this whole primary and election, that the Republicans, the way they act today, 20 years ago would have been Democrats and nobody would have batted an eye. I mean, it's that frog in the water, you know, in the cold water, and turn up the, you know, the heat until it boils concept. There
yep.
is no way as Republicans 20, 25, 30 years ago, anything that happened in the Bush era would have been acceptable. Republicans would have revolted. But we just rolled over and said, okay, it's a Republican doing it. We'll be okay when they take away our civil rights and burn the Bill of Rights, you know, at the altar of hell. This is
Absolutely,
what I don't
because
understand.
Everyone is focused on the team. And, you know, as we've said over and over on this show, it's because political factions, which is what the Founding Fathers called political parties, they believed that they were not only dangerous but inherently evil. And we're seeing now why. Because they blind the voter to think, if I vote for this team, then I'm voting for this set of policies. You have to vote for the individual regardless of what team he happens to be on. You need
exactly.
to know who your representatives are and what they stand for and what they're voting on. You know, and of course, here's the big problem now. Hell, half the time the representatives don't even know what they're voting on because they get the bill and they have 3 minutes to read a 2,000-page bill before they actually have the vote on it. That's not by accident.
Yeah, that's a leadership thing. That's the leaders doing that to them, saying, this is what we're going to do, guys. You know, I've cut this deal. And this is.
He wouldn't do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about, you know, the Senate? We don't talk about the Senate enough. You know, McConnell and McCain. I mean, that's just as bad.
Yeah, the Senate are just congressmen with extended terms. You know.
Yeah.
They must be
honest. They're congressmen with three terms.
Yeah.
Not that they're all popularly elected. They're not trying to stand up for states' rights or hold back the encroachment of the federal government like they used to. They're just, you know, on board. But look, in this latest thing about the fiscal cliff, you know, McConnell was playing a leading role in getting a deal with Biden, right? So he called Biden and was like, hey, is there anybody there who knows how to get a deal? And it was McConnell who got the deal. They got sent over to the House, right? So once again, you have the, you know, bills of revenue shall initiate in the House thing. But Boehner's like, yeah, whatever, you know, I don't care. As long as I don't have to do too much.
Which is an abdication of his responsibility as Speaker of the House, and revenue bills originate in the House, and therein is the problem.
Yeah, McConnell negotiates the deal, throws it to the House, they vote on it, they freaking approve it, and the rest is history. But there's two things to think about that. Either Boehner was, you know, spectacularly incompetent, or Boehner was telling McConnell, look, I can't take lead on this because if I do, my party's going to revolt against me, and now I've got to go buy a bunch of people off with $9 billion worth of Sandy aid or whatever in order to retain my position. I'm going to need you to take points on this one, right? Or he just didn't know what he was doing and couldn't get a deal with Obama. Remember, this guy was negotiating face-to-face with Obama for all these days, and now the story comes out that it was McConnell that actually got it. Well, you know, look at who was screwing Reagan back when Reagan was in power. Bob Dole with TEFRA, and we got to raise taxes. We have to address this deficit. This deficit is terrible. Well, okay, the deficit's terrible. You know what the problem is? It's all this freaking government spending. But that's not what Dole said. It's the fact that the receipts don't match revenue. Okay, well, don't have so many receipts, right? Pretty easy.
That's too simple, man.
Quit sending those things here.
Well, that's not entirely wrong when you look at the logic that they apply. I mean, look, think about this, right? First of all, we're told by both the White House and the House that all the bills will be, you know, online for 3 days for us to read. Of course, they're, you know, like 3,000 pages, so no one can read them in 3 days anyway. And then, you know, they wrote this thing. They made the deal, right? And I think that they announced the vote to the senators at like 1:36, and they voted on it at 1:39. So someone got confused when they said 3 days to 3 minutes. Now, you tell me, in 3 minutes, did any one of those damn senators read the thing? Hell no.
Oh, not just that. It's not in English. It's legalese.
And then they send it over to the House on New Year's Day, right? Do you think any of those guys read it? Hell no. They were told, it includes this, it includes that, plus we did put in your provision for the $222 million you needed. Okay, I'll be a yes vote. That's what's so messed up. And the thing is that this has to be exposed to people who aren't paying attention, because if they knew this, they'd be so pissed they would actually do something about it. And, we keep saying call your office, and that's important. You have to do it. And don't ever think for a minute, let somebody else do it. I don't have to do it. We all have to do it. It needs to be an overwhelming number of people calling and telling them, look, we know what you're up to. Quit screwing around. So make your calls.
Well, I think the problem is that
– Absolutely, Rex. And, the person who was the king of that was John Conyers, right, who I think I pulled up the clip, but, I'm not 100% sure. But when he said, as they were passing Obamacare, he's like, I love all these people who say, read the bill. Well, what's the point of reading the bill if it's going to take you 3 days to read it and an army of lawyers to understand it? Yeah, so just pass that one then, huh, John, right? I don't know what the hell it says. Who cares? I'm chairman of the Judiciary Committee. I don't give a crap what it says, I just pass it because if I read it, I wouldn't understand it anyway. Why do you even have this job? What are you doing?
I get to go to all the cool parties, and I get a pension for life of $147,000 indexed for inflation. Screw you.
Really? I got to run for Congress.
No kidding.
It's a good racket.
I mean, how often do they really work?
Yeah. Why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is, right? Washington.
Oh, my God.
I think.
You guys there?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
No dead air.
I was going to see if I had
everybody.
John Conyers.
Why don't you guys riff for a little bit? I'll see if I can dig it up and put it in. Play it for you.
Well, I love Newt's talk on Morning Joe. I mean, that was, Newt just said it. I know that you guys probably know that Robert and I broke down Newt's memo and in detail, line by line, basically, and really going through that. And I just kept seeing this thread running through it that just kept screaming. What Newt's saying is all this stuff they need to look at and the stuff they need to study and all these groups. I mean, he already knows the answer. All you got to do is look at what the Tea Party did and look at what the Ron Paul movement did. There's your answer.
Yeah.
It was like, man, that was a lot of writing, Newt, to really come up with. If the RNC wants answers, they need to hire, the key people in the Ron Paul campaign and the Palins and that group and the Tea Party movement and sit down and put them in a room and go, how'd you move 10 million people? And how did you give us 30 governors and 24 state total Republican state control and 68 Tea Party people in the House and Senate. Duh.
Absolutely.
You don't need to hire a $1 million consultant for that. Go talk to the guy that made it happen. I was screaming at the top of my lungs almost during this analogy with Robert going, these consultants, people who have never done shit in their life, get this education, put a, shingle up on a wall and go, I is one. They've never done crap. And then they go out and look at people who have done things and try to analyze what they did. Go talk to the guy who did it. That's how you learn. If you want to learn how to succeed, you go talk to the guy who has succeeded, not the guy who went to college and read a book on how to succeed. Oh, my God. Sorry.
Yeah, well,
I'm on a...
it's like a guy comes out of college, he knows ditch digging theory, but he's never dug a ditch,
God.
But, it's absolutely true, because all the way through what Gingrich was saying there, he was talking about the consultants and what they were saying. And, it's like these consultants, basically who were the big leeches just sucking money out of the RNC. Meanwhile, blowing kisses at all the leadership and at Mitt Romney. Said, oh, you're going to win. You're the fairest of them all, Mitt. He's like, I am the fairest of them all. Here's $1 million. Thanks for telling me that.
Oh, my God.
Then Gingrich, he's got all these answers. Look, this is what you need to do, line by line. Do this, and you would succeed. I mean, people have already figured out what's going on and how to win, and you guys aren't listening. And then he says, of course, he doesn't want to upset all the consultants and everything, because it's like he's going after their jobs. But so he says they still do have a role to play.
Oh yeah, I was thinking of that sentence when yeah. you were talking that.
I know what that role is. Sharpen this pencil. Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, look, it's the these consultants, like you said, are just as pathetic as you know, all these corporations that hire, you know, the latest NBA bean counter, and he comes up with the next strategy without consulting any of the people who are, you know, down in the trenches doing the real work. And it's the same thing. It's all garbage. And when, you know, you got and it's these consultants that manage these media campaigns for these elected critters. And people have to understand something. You know, look at the Constitution.
Critter?
Yeah, congressional critters. Look in the Constitution for the requirements to be a congressional critter. All right, it has a citizenship requirement, a residency requirement, an age requirement. That's it. It doesn't have anything about experience, intelligence, competency. It was expected that the people would be smart enough to elect the best people to go and do this job. But with these media consultant campaigns, you get, you know, this snow job of this guy who's capable and accomplished and all this stuff. 90% of these guys are no smarter than you. Most of them are dumber than you. They don't know shit about the bills that they're voting on because they've never had a job or they've never been involved in this industry, you know, and they go in there as freshmen and they're, you know, the more experienced ones, so this is how it gets done. Start raising money. We'll tell you how to vote and what to do, and we'll put you on a committee and you'll have a great career. And none of them are competent to do this job. And then you get some that are, you know, like Yoho and Amash and these guys, and when they don't color within the lines,
well,
you know, there's snickers and smirks about how crazy they are. And I mean, the thing you brought up earlier about not reading the bill, here's a 30-minute clip, and it includes Conyers making that statement. Let's listen to it. Oh, go ahead, Doug.
Okay.
Go ahead, Doug.
Right. Well, no, I was going to say one thing. Okay, they don't understand how the people feel about these issues and all this stuff, but they get paid all this money. That's correct, because they live inside the bubble. But the point is, they don't care what the people think, because it's not the people and what they think and what you want isn't what's greasing the wheels in Washington. They know what the money people think. And money talks, right? So that's who they're in tune with. Who's got the money? This industry wants to give this amount of money for this. This industry, that's their interest. That's who they're shilling for, if you want to get
sure.
down to brass tacks. What you and your neighbors think about the fact that they're getting screwed over left and right, the consultants will never know, because they don't live near your neighbors, and they don't want to. They live up in Prince George's County.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't get carried away. I live near these people. they're in these six zip codes around me in the Imperial City, the wealthiest zip codes in the country. All right, it's disgusting. I mean, I got to tell you something. For those of you that haven't been here, let me tell you something. The greater Washington area, which includes Montgomery County, Howard County, Fairfax, Prince William, Arlington, Alexandria, all the places around Washington, D.C., if you're within this area, you would think that there is no recession, there is no depression, there is no unemployment, and everything is great. There is a shitload of money here because the factory in town keeps getting bigger.
Your
and,
money.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that everybody's on the take, but if you're in business here, if you're a lawyer, you know, who does like you know, Second Amendment cases, or you're a computer contractor, or you're an insurance agent, or whatever, all right, 40 to 50% of your revenue comes from the government, because everybody around here is either a government employee, military, or a contractor associated with it in some way. The entire economy here is based on appropriating money from you in the rest of the country and bringing it here. And these people, they fly from their district, they come here, and this is what they spend most of their time living in, where everything looks normal. They have no idea that you don't have a job, that you can't eat, that the price of milk is very high. We're about to lose our live audience. I want to thank you all for being here. We're probably going to go into overtime, so please check us out in archives. And I just want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And I don't want you to take any kind of despondency from the information we're sharing. Okay, be realist. All right, we lay it out for you as it is. Sometimes the picture is bleak because, let's face it, shit's crazy, and it is a bleak picture. But don't be depressed. Don't get upset. You have the power, and you can win this. So don't stress about it. Just get mad and get busy. And get others mad and get them busy. Because if we keep reelecting morons like John Boehner and Prince Pubic and Barack Obama and Harry Reid and John McCain, you're going to keep getting more of this. And at some point,
very soon it will collapse. And I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing, because it's a bad system. But what we need to do is try to prevent it from collapsing it by fixing it before that happens. And that's up to you. So, you know, again, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and check us out in Archives for Overtime. Gentlemen, I'll throw it back to you after we hear this Conyers clip, because I think it is testimony to how insipid these people are.
During his speech at a National Press Club luncheon, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, Democratic Congressman John Conyers, questioned the point of lawmakers reading the health care bill.
I love these members that get up and say, read the bill. What good is reading the bill if it's 1,000 pages and you don't have 2 days and two lawyers to find out what it means after you read the bill?
Was that the clip you were looking for, Tex?
And you know what? This kind of comes down to another constitutional principle, which is equality before the law. And if Congress is passing bills that can't be understood by the average American unless they read it for 2 to 3 days straight, and they're passing these things every freaking week, right? And even if you do read it, you need a team of lawyers to tell you what the heck it says. I would submit that you don't have equality before the law, because all of us don't have a team of lawyers backing us up.
Yeah. Well, that's very true, and that's precisely why these things are supposed to be broken down and simple. And guess what? If the Senate puts together a boondoggle with all sorts of extra spending and sends it to the House for reconciliation, the House can pick it apart and only pass the portions that are legitimate, constitutional, and necessary. But Johnny Bingham
won't do that. How many times did
he
say that?
Well, I mean, yeah, Newt knows how to do the job. I mean, he should be Speaker of the House. We'd be getting things done. Gentlemen, we have a caller. I know we're in overtime and we're not going to be on for too long, but I believe that we have someone who wants to get on the show from area code 304. If I'm not mistaken, that's West Virginia. 304, you're live with Tex and Rex and Chris. How are you and what's on your mind?
Hi, it's Tessa.
Hey, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm
good. Chris, I was going to address what you were talking about the, or was it Rex, talking about the Tea Party and the Libertarians. The problem is, I think, because they're trying to figure out how to shut everybody out. They don't want us. They're not trying to figure out how to win. They're just trying to figure out how to win without us.
Chris, I believe that was you. Said that, so you.
Yeah, I was stuffing my face. You're absolutely correct. Somebody told me the other day they haven't heard me chewing on the phone for a while, so you get to hear me with a mouthful while I'm talking. But, you know, you're absolutely correct. Here's the challenge. They lost. They lost seats in House and Senate, and they lost the presidency, so now they're freaking out. And I think that's where Newt ran with his memo. I don't know if you've really, you know, taken the time to read it. It is long. And
yes,
I'm glad
I did it.
Yeah, I'm glad I did it, because it really showed, once again, Newt's brilliance. And it also shows a man who wrote something who understands how to do it. You know, there's a consultant they need to hire. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
but
he's controversial.
Absolutely.
Because he has never once addressed the problem in Tampa, that I imagine I'm just a little bit more cynical than a lot of people. I'm not sure that he also is not working on how to destroy us. I'm sorry. I know that's a terribly terrible thing to say for a bunch of Newt fans, and I am one. I think the man is genius, but on the other hand, I have no trust for any of them anymore.
Tessa, we should be skeptical of all of them, because that's our job. I mean, even the best of them, Newt, Reagan, Goldwater, Ron Paul, Rand Paul, you got to be skeptical. That's your responsibility as an American. However,
sure.
I will argue that Newt is far shrewder than most. And you know, I've been following him for a while, so I kind of understand this a little better than people who just see cursory, you know, news articles of him. And I know that you like Newt, but when you hear Newt speak, you got to not necessarily parse his words, but you got to read into his intention, because he says things in a way where he's putting forward the principle, but he puts it in such a way that it's not untenable in Washington. And you know, again, we were supposed to get to this memo tonight, and the show's over, so we'll hopefully get to it next week. It's a six-month project that Newt said, and so far we've missed it for 3 weeks, but we'll eventually get to it. But if you read the memo that he wrote, he says things in a way that's palpable to who he's addressing, because allegedly it was little Prince Pubic who asked him to write the analysis. But he points, if you look in the words, to the Tea Party and the Liberty Movement. And I think that Newt knows that the only way the Republican Party has a future is by embracing the Liberty Party, you know, the Liberty Movement and the Tea Party. And let's think about what he did in the late 90s. Now, did he go as far as Ron Paul would have liked, or as far as, you know, libertarians would have liked? No. But he did move in that direction. Now, there were some things that he did which are completely off the wall. There was, you know, the whole the NAFTA problem, the Mexico bailout. That was when he was Speaker. So there are certain things that are problematic. But overall, you know, by reducing spending, balancing budget, cutting taxes, I mean, you know, one of the reasons we had the boom in the late 90s with the stock market was obviously easing by the Fed, but it was also because there was a capital gains tax cut. And now, of course, if you have more than $450 in income, your capital gains taxes just went up 25%. Who do you think
right.
invests in the market most? People who make less than $450 or people who make more than $450? So he did things that are in the right direction, that are Tea Party things, and that are sort of, you know, Ron Paul type things, at least fiscally. So I don't think that he is going to try to figure out how to win by marginalizing us. I think he's trying to figure out how to incorporate these principles, these ideas, and this constituency into a corrupt leadership, knowing that if he just takes them head on, they're so entrenched right now that it's a pointless effort and the party would just become useless.
You have to realize he kind of did take them head on in the last primary, and they sort of, you know, crushed him. You know,
mm-hmm.
on the media and all this other kind of stuff. So he's like, okay, you know, you may ridicule me, you may crush me in the media and everything so that you can have your golden boy rhino, but your golden boy rhino isn't good enough, right? And now they've realized that. And once after Tampa, there were all sorts of people out there saying that Newt Gingrich isn't doing enough to support Mitt Romney. Well,
yeah,
it's not Newt Gingrich's job to support Mitt Romney. It's Mitt Romney's job to make the case for Mitt Romney. But they wanted Newt. You know why? Because the base likes Newt. Well, if the base liked Newt, you know what? Mitt Romney wouldn't have lost to John McCain again. You know, you would have had conservatives come out. And so what Newt is doing, I think, you know, to the extent that I can, you know, read his mind or at least read the tea leaves, I think that he realizes the party is pretty entrenched. He's got to be a team player. It's not time to go after everything that's wrong with the Republican Party. You do it in small steps. And I think Newt has always been a pragmatist. And the most important thing is not necessarily reforming the internal problems of the Republican Party. If you do that, you do that quietly and behind the scenes. You certainly don't do it on television. You do it by talking to key players, many of which Newt Gingrich has worked with over many years, including Michelle Bachmann, to put them in positions of power and places where they can affect change. You do that behind the scenes. But the most important thing is governing. And that's where you see Newt Gingrich on television talking about governing, the art of governing, and what the Republican Party needs to be doing as a party, rather than what rules within the Republican Party need to be changed to fix whatever problems there are.
I got a little add-on I want to add, if that's okay.
Go for it.
Okay. Here's another thing too that's really important to understand. Mark Levin has a listening base. You know, we have a listening base. Rush has a listening base. You know, they can go wild and speak to the base and rile people up and say all kinds of crazy crap and talk the raw truth, and they gain callers. Newt's
mm-hmm.
in a political position where he's got to be careful, because if he comes out full attack, He gets cut off. He loses his voice. He doesn't get on the news. So he has to be a statesman. And it's a little bit different environment. We would love him to get up and just kick the crap out of everybody, but he would get to do that for about 2, 3, 4 shows, and then he wouldn't have a voice anymore because he doesn't have a radio show.
Yeah, and well, look at what Ron Paul. Look at what the media did to Ron Paul and the party did to Ron Paul.
It was terrible.
Ron Paul has been out for years fighting for these issues and saying these things, and the Republican Party has been, Ron Paul's a kook, keep away from him. Ron Paul doesn't know what he's talking about. He's not going along with the leadership on this vote, that vote. And so they shut him down. And then when he runs for president, the media shuts him down, because the Republican Party also has influence within the media to say, we don't want this guy to get coverage. And so Gingrich has to be careful about what he attacks and when he attacks it. And, you know, he judges where he can be most effective to affect the kind of change that will bring about legislative victories. That's what he does on television, and helping to frame the debate. Anything that involves reforming the party, he's going to do behind the scenes.
Yeah, he's doing – go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Chris. No, go ahead, Chris.
Well, he's doing – what he's doing is he's consulting Boehner and the leadership how to win and be men and do what they're supposed to do with the powers that they really do have. He's kind of consulting it over open air to everybody in the country. He's going, here's how you win. Here's how you defeat this situation. Here's how you fight
this
next battle. Yeah.
It's war. This is war. And the thing is that we have to look at it from the perspective that whether you could use a war analogy, you can use chess. Okay. Either way, you don't pick one weapon and go to the front line and take your enemy head on with that one weapon. You need multiple weapons for different terrains, different tactics, and you can't only take the enemy head on. You need an information campaign. You need subversive covert ops. So you go in with multiple things, and we have to really start looking at it that way. We kind of view this as a sports contest where, you know, you pick your team, okay, and then you just support your team, and you go in there head on, and you hope you win the game. But the truth is, war is a much more appropriate analogy. Your chess, you know, you don't. Sometimes you sacrifice your queen. Generally, you sacrifice a pawn, but you play them both because the pawn sometimes isn't as important as the queen. And so, what we have is we have a lot of really great generals. Okay, you've got General, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? He's no longer shackled by Congress. So he's going to be extremely effective outside of Congress in ways that he was never effective in Congress. Look at Jim DeMint, right? He's going to be far more effective, in my opinion, at the Heritage Foundation than he was as one of 100 senators. And you've got Newt, who takes a different approach. And I think the fact is that all of these people, if you actually put them in a room and ask them where they are, you'd find an 80% agreement, and you'd find 20% where they, you know, around the edges where they don't necessarily agree. But they're going to go about it in different ways. And we need to support conservatism and, if you want, you know, conservative libertarianism as well, wherever we can find it and whoever we can go forward with, because someone like Justin Amash or Ted Yoho, who has one of the first – on his first day as you know, going in, voted against the Speaker of the House. So they're going to be less effective short term because they're going to be shut down. They can't silence Newt that easily because he's playing the game right. They certainly can't do anything to Ron Paul because he's out there now, and they can't do anything to Jim DeMint. So we need all of these people. We need to be firing on all cylinders, and we need to support all of them wherever we can in order to take incremental victories, because we are not going to win this in one fell swoop. Whether it's because a total collapse happens and we got to rebuild, or because we're going to go through a few election cycles. But it took us 100 years to get here. And it's not necessarily going to take 100 years to get back. We don't have 100 years, but it's certainly going to be, you know, at least a decade. And this decade can be the decade that we end the 100-year reign of the corporatist oligarchy. But it's going to take time. There's going to be setbacks. There's going to be losses. I mean, look, we got Mitt Romney. We got the debacle in Tampa. John Boehner just won. These are setbacks, but they're not total losses, because ultimately we have the power, and we just have to not be critical of those who are on our team, not the party team, but on our side of conservatism. If we don't agree with everything they're doing or how they're saying it, we just have to keep pushing forward in any way that we can. And I think that that's what makes Newt dangerous and effective, because he can put the agenda forward without being so obvious about it that they eliminate him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. But what I was concerned about, I think, is I'm worried that they will be more concerned about how to do the messaging to get people who really aren't that involved in politics, because those of us who are, we're going to be paying a little bit more attention to it. But as you know, we're really the minority. We're only, what, probably about 10-20% of the population who really pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the messaging is what they're going to focus on, I'm afraid, because if you read the article that I put in Coalition of Freedom, they're trying to figure out ways to marginalize the Tea Party and the Libertarian Party.
Mm-hmm. So, of course.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
I think you're right. They will focus on messaging. But They also have realized that they have some serious flaws either in their strategy plan or the consultants who are coming up with their strategies and plans, because they thought, we'll message Romney. Look, everybody hates Romney, but we'll just message that Barack Obama is the end of America, and who would vote for the end of America, right? So that's what they thought. We'll come up with this messaging, socialism, all the communism, all this kind of stuff, and that'll be enough to get us over the top. Well, it didn't even get them to beat John McCain's, you know, total last time.
Exactly.
Now, you know, the purists will say, well, we found some votes in a box in a trunk somewhere, and he actually did overcome by whatever it was, 50,000 votes. But it's ridiculous. And these consultants, they are very focused on messaging because they're talking to the money people, and the money people want their guy to get through, right? So they need their rabbit to be pulled through the fence. And the only way they can do that is through messaging, because their rabbit doesn't believe in what the conservatives believe, but they need to get this guy through, and so they package him, and they message him, and they position him, and do all this other kind of stuff. And they thought, why did Barack Obama win in 2008 when John McCain has, I mean, if you look at the story of John McCain's life, what he's been through, what he's done, it's really a classic American story, right? Okay, so John McCain is also kind of a rhino, but, you know, in terms of what he accomplished in his life, he's a substantial individual and has been through things that most of us probably might not even survive. So he loses to Barack Obama, who doesn't even have a resume, hasn't done anything, is very, has the guy even had a job? I don't know, is a community organizer a job? You know, I don't know. And so they say, well, how did Barack Obama win? And it's not how did he beat John McCain necessarily. How did he overcome Hillary Clinton? I mean, my God, here's a Clinton, you know, the pretty boys of the Democrat Party. And so they said, well, he ran as an empty suit, who is everything to everyone, who is generally a nice guy, and he was this big agent of change, right? So they thought, what we need is a pretty boy, put him in a brown paper bag, you know, and then paint the American flag on it, and just say these key phrases that we focus grouped, and we'll get him through, and everybody will say, wow, what a nice guy. I'd love to hang out with Mitt Romney because he's such a regular Joe. That's why he likes Costco, you know?
Trees.
And it didn't work. And then they lose, and now they don't know what's going on. They're completely demoralized. And so they went with the narrative, well, the conservatives cost us the election. Well, the conservatives did cost you the election because they didn't show up to vote for the guy. But you're right. What
I
they
love
want
this
to do.
It seems right here. The trees are the right height.
The trees are the right height. He's a regular guy. He's a regular guy.
Well, he can pull off regular guy no matter how hard he tried anyway. That's what I, that was one of the things that I told a friend that I guess I think actually personally knows him or something. I said, tell him to stop. He's making a fool out of himself. He's not a regular guy. Please quit. You know, I'm sorry. You're embarrassing yourself.
He might be an android or an alien.
Be what you are. You're a wealthy guy. Flaunt it. What the heck? But don't try to be regular Joe. You are not regular Joe.
Well, that might not have been him. That might
have
been
his
gay robot clone.
Guy. I'm a regular Joe.
He's a gay robot clone.
Don't you remember that Mitt Romney style? That video, that Mitt Romney style song?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I've heard that everywhere.
Romney's, we've got problems, too. But look, I think the fact is that, and what Tex just pointed out is absolutely true. Okay, even if Romney somehow managed to get a couple more votes than John McCain, he still lost to a guy who lost 13% of his vote. So there are going to be the bulk of people who vote who are going to fall for the messaging. And maybe they don't even fall for the messaging. They're just going to go vote for the D or the R. They've already made up their mind what they're doing in 4 years now anyway. They're not the ones that decide the election. The election is decided by those 90,000 who didn't vote. And like you said, those of us who are truly active, we're the ones who are going to make the decisions. And in some ways, I think that the messaging is going to be the biggest problem for these rhinos, because if they're going to try to message conservatism and libertarianism, first of all, they have to know how to do it, and only those who are authentically understand these principles can message it properly. And then second of all, they keep painting themselves into a box because they keep failing to deliver. And that's their undoing, okay? They've been doing this to us for a very long time, but starting when in 2008,
mm-hmm.
when the, you know, before Obama, really the Tea Party started,
upset.
You know, back then.
Yeah,
Well, yeah, even in 2006. But you know, you remember when Bush said this?
I've abandoned free market principles to save the free market system.
Yeah.
No conservative or libertarian in their right mind accepted that, and that's why the Republicans lost, and that's why they're going to keep losing, and they're going to keep getting more and more marginalized, and they're going to lose the committee positions and everything else because they can't message these Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich principles and fail to act on them over and over and over again. They've gone too far. So, yes, they're going to try. I'm not saying they're not going to try, and we have to counterstrike. But then when we have people like Yoho and Amash and Rand Paul, we need to loudly and powerfully get behind them so that they will become more powerful and they can defeat the rhino virus. And,
right.
And the, you know, there's guys like Newt who are very strategic about it. There are guys like Ron Paul who are very inspirational and philosophical about it. And then, of course, the real work is going to fall on the shoulders of people like Rand Paul, who actually have to roll up their sleeves, Justin Amash, and do the work in Congress. But don't forget also the governors and the state legislatures,
yeah.
Because the fact is that the real solution to this problem is never, ever going to come from Washington. It is going to come from the states becoming more conservative, which they are, and asserting their authority under the 10th Amendment to crush extra-constitutional government in Washington. So it's a battle on many, many fronts, and I think that the victory is really ours. We just have to learn to be patient because it isn't something that's going to happen in 2014 or 2016. It might not even happen by 2020. But if we keep incrementally working towards it, hopefully in the 2020s, we can see a real restoration of the republic, the end of the Fed, sound money, low taxes that are not, you know, invasive direct taxes, and start really building what the Founding Fathers intended this country to be. I think it can be done.
Well, Rex, let me add something to this, and this is important because we get two conversations, I think, kind of get intertwined, and one is we talk about the presidential election and the national election, and the other one is the one that's coming up. And that's your 2014, where for all the House are up for re-election and 33 senators. That's where the grassroots does its best work. And with the RNC trying to figure out whose nose to pick next, I believe, and you heard this early in the primary, because a lot of people are going, well, what are the Tea Party's going to do for the presidential election? And we kept hearing them saying, well, we're not focusing on that. It's almost like they already knew Romney was going to be picked no matter what. And they focused at the where they are the strongest at. And you go back to the 24 states that have full Republican control, 30 governors are Republicans. And, you know, that's the next wave, you know, and most of those are the Tea Party wave. So that is where the power is going to come from. And 2014 can be a dynamic time once again, just like 2010 was.
Oh, yeah, I think it can be even more so, and I think that, you know, look, sometimes we get caught up in our little spheres. Okay, let's face it, we're not big power players, most of us, so, you know, you get caught up in your, whether it's your local Republican Party precinct, your local Constitution Party, your local Tea Party, or, you know, the Facebook group you belong to or Blog Talk Radio show, and you think, okay, well, you know, we're doing something here, but this is all there is. But there are probably hundreds doing the same thing all over the place, and we're going to make a huge and resounding sound in 2014, but it is up to those of us who are active now to remain active, to inspire each other, especially when we feel like giving up, because, I mean, it just sometimes is like too much, but also to increase the ranks by recruiting. And the way you recruit is you just simply have conversations with people. And any group, whether it's a club, a political organization, or anything else, the most common reason people say why they never got involved is they say, no one asked me. No one asked me. That's why organizations fail.
Yeah. And number two is I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? A lot of times people just don't know what's available to them. It's amazing how many people, you know, I think about when I first started researching the Paul movement and my misconceptions based on other people. I did not know. So I went out and said, well, the guy's filling coliseums. He's pulling 6,000 people. Romney's pulling 500. I'm going to go find out what this, who this guy really is. You know, and for me, I was, you know, self-driven, but a lot of people aren't. You got to get up and say, did you know this? And you find out a lot of times they did not know because they aren't paying attention or they're watching Fox News or whatever.
That's right. Yeah, and to that point, I will say, you know, go back to our Christmas show. You know, you remember, Chris, you and I, for the Tex and Rex Christmas show, we visited Republicans past. And
awesome.
When you listen to them and then you listen to Ron Paul, you go, wait a minute, Ron Paul is just, you know, a regular conservative Republican. He's not kooky. He's not zany. He's not off the wall. His foreign policy isn't absolutely crazy. I mean, I don't agree with that 100%, but it's certainly more like Republicans of days gone by than it is like these neocons. So, you know, people don't know these things, and sometimes if you don't have time to pay attention, because between, you know, taking care of your kids and going to work and commuting and this and that and the other, you just, you know, you hear these little sound bites, and you hear Ron Paul's crazy, Ron Paul's zany, Newt Gingrich ethics violations, Newt Gingrich got ousted, all that kind of stuff, and you just dismiss them outright. But you got to go back and look and listen and understand, and really that's every single one of us who is aware is responsible for telling everybody else. Now, some people aren't going to pay attention. Some people can tell you to screw off. Some people are just going to, you know, not do anything about it. But like with anything else, you have to learn to love no, okay? Because if you're going to ask people to get involved, most of them are going to tell you no. And every no that you hear is one no closer to getting a yes. And if you even just manage to get one person involved once a week, okay, and we each do that and then they do that, by 2014, we will be such a loud and powerful majority. With all the tools that we've got, with Blog Talk Radio, Facebook, Twitter, email these days, we can build a very vast movement that can make a huge, huge sonic boom at the polls.
Well, Rex, you know, you talked about the January. We're at the Epiphany year, so, you know, January 6th, 12th day of Christmas. So here's a little epiphany that I had the other day. So I was talking with this person, and this is the same person who was talking about, you know, getting rid of the Republican Party and all that kind of stuff, and just saying it's completely worthless. All of this was just, I'm sitting there, we're looking at a TV of a sports game, and all of a sudden, you know, some news stuff comes on, and then we start talking about that. And then, interestingly enough, you know, something that we've been talking about for a long time about the left-right paradigm being false, and there's a third dimension, which is centralized and decentralized government.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what this guy throws out at me? He's like, yeah, all this left-right stuff, it doesn't make sense because you've got a third dimension here. That's really the dimension of the conflict. I was like, whoa. You know, that was the moment where you realize you're actually reaching people, you know, and you're making a difference because I don't know where he heard that. I don't know how he heard that, but somehow through some various channels of, you know, all the many shows that we've done and talked about and all the work that we've done over the past several months, somehow this got to him. Now, of course, it could be someone else, you know, simultaneous creation or something, but it's always satisfying when you're out there talking about a message and hear something that you've been talking about repeated back to you, and you're like, wow. Either this is having an effect, you know, and it's resonating, and that's what's really the most important thing, and that's how you affect real change across the country.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, but let me throw this out. I think also is we're finding each other, Tex. Mm-hmm. I think that like-minded people, you know, through the, you know, the noise of the primary and the election, which takes, you know, 99% of the airwaves, and we're out there, you know, speaking a totally different message, that we're finding each other.
Yep.
And that's that coalition thing. You know, that's that coalition thing. By the time, that's my goal, by the time 2014 hits, I want to be impacting tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people, that when I put a message or information out there, that it gets to people, because I'm trying to do good work. I'm trying to, you know, be factual and have good information, use my head, critical thinking, do my research, educate myself, so when I speak speak, people listen, so that I can affect change, because I believe we can have another bigger than the 2010 election run.
I agree. Unfortunately, we lost Tessa. Her phone died, but hopefully she'll call back in next week. But look, you're absolutely right. I mean, first of all, we are the majority. Okay, people who are authentically conservative and libertarian agree on more than we disagree, and we are the majority. But they've kept us divided so long that we always thought we weren't. So you're right, we're connecting. Two, the truth is attractive. The truth is attractive. The Constitution is still the supreme law of the land. Conservative principles and fiscal libertarianism and federalism are very attractive because they work. And the other thing is, like anything else, if you look at marketing, similarities don't sell. Differences do. And we're different. We're different than the mainstream rhino, Democrat, duopoly message. So we've got that to our advantage. We're saying something that's different, so it stands out. We're speaking the truth. Now, that doesn't mean we know everything or that we get it 100% right all the time, but we're speaking the truth. And there are more of us who believe this stuff than don't. So that's a very powerful formula if you can make it work. And the only way to make it work is with big, big money or large numbers.
Huge networks.
We don't have the money. We will never have the money. We will never be able to get more money than the duopoly and the corporate media has.
Maybe we can rent it.
Yeah, I get some monopoly money here. So since we can't get the money, then the thing we have to count on is the numbers, which is why everybody listening to this, well, you should make it a mission. Listen, when you listen to Chris's show and Robert Jeter's Bart's Logic, when you listen to the shows, what you need to do is get somebody else to do it. Get somebody else to listen, download the show, share it with them, but pass the information on and tell them, look, I'm giving you something that is different, that's new, that's truthful, that's going to be a big change in 2014. You know, do something with this information, share it with somebody. Because if you share it with people and they share it with people and we keep doing that, by 2014 it will be a huge wave of reform. And don't forget that there are people like Justin Amash, Rand Paul, Ted Yoho, who might be considering getting involved because they feel a call to duty. But they don't think they can win because there aren't enough people who would agree with their message. If enough of us are out there saying this stuff, someone will say, hey, you know what, there's more and more people who kind of think the way that I'm thinking, and I wanted to run for office, but I just never thought I could beat the machine. But there's so many people that agree with the principles I stand for, I'm going to go ahead and give it a shot. So if you build the voting base, the candidates will come. And that's what we have to work on. So don't just sit back and listen, and don't just sit back and nod and agree and post on Facebook and send out a tweet and chat. And we appreciate everybody who shares the show and likes our Facebook page and listens. But you got to take that information. You got to share it with other people. All right, gentlemen, we've gone into about a half hour of overtime, so why don't I throw it to Chris and then Tex for final thoughts, and then I'll close out the show.
Who's up first? I'm sorry.
Chris.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Well, and another thing I think that's important, too, is that, and I've talked about this quite a bit, is, and it's something I have to do for myself. I've learned it in the information age explosion in business, and it's something my brother, who's a project manager, has talked about, is you have to manage information. You have to decide what's noise. It's all important if you focus on it. The problem is mainstream media has invaded the social networks because most people just become the repeating arm of the news of the day. And I don't mean to sound, you know, to sound critical of people, but I see it in the way people post. Everybody's just posting the same thing over and over and over and over again. What I always try to do in my group is find real key content that really matters, and it's a long-term, deep issue, and keep it alive and build on it and educate around it and research on it, because there's only two or three things you can focus on effectively anyway. And when you become a rapid poster of the news of the day, all you're doing is you're doing CNN's job for them. And I think that's real important. You have to unplug from that concept. You have to change that mental habit, because the thing that America, the way you control America today is fear and crisis. And they don't even wait for the next big one. They have one every day. There's a fear and a crisis mode constantly in this country, and it keeps people numb. And the problem is that people just keep carrying it on. Stop that.
Yep.
Get away from that. Pick your topics. Pick your key items you want to work and fight for, and stay on them and fight for them. That's my input.
No, you're right. It's absolutely, fear is paralyzing.
Chris,
I'm
terrified about
here.
The flu epidemic that is sweeping the country. I don't know. I don't even leave the house. I'm standing right now in a rubber suit as I broadcast tonight. I am so scared. And I'm going to go wash my hands again, as I do every 5 minutes.
You and you, Hefner?
Yeah.
Howard Hughes.
I don't know that Hugh
yeah.
Hefner ever
Howard
watched
Hughes,
much
I'm
of anything.
Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
I think you have to be the opposite of Howard Hughes in that regard. He's probably got more things that we don't want to know about. But it seems as if Tex is doing everything that he can to avoid catching the rhinovirus, and I think that I applaud your efforts. Chris,
absolutely.
Thanks. So next show is tomorrow at 8:30 Eastern, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Coalition of Freedom on Blog Talk Radio and Facebook. Everybody check it out. Tex, final thoughts, and then we'll close out the evening.
Final thoughts, I don't know. we just but what do you do in this situation? You know, it's like you're watching this train go off the cliff. But the nice thing is that now – you know, that I've sort of, the scales have fallen from my eyes in the Republican Party to an extent that a year ago they had not, I can just sit back and watch this thing self-destruct, and it doesn't matter to me, because the Republican Party is just a vehicle to get accomplished, you know, the things that I want to see done in government. And if they continue on this path, then, you know, whether they succeed or fail is sort of immaterial to me. What matters is whether or not there are like-minded Americans out there who agree with what I agree with, of any, you know, political party, wherever they happen to have located themselves, if you fix this party, or if you get a new party, those people will find it, and they'll come here. This is sort of the Reagan Democrat phenomenon, right? So there are a bunch of people in the Democrat Party who believe these things, and they left the Democrat Party when Reagan started talking about them. That's the real hope, is that there are people who see beyond party. And you know, I'm coming to that now. I think others are as well. And the reality is that a lot of what Ron Paul says I like a lot. There are some things Ron Paul says that I disagree with, but I disagree with Newt Gingrich on a lot of things too. But I think the real rising political movement in this country right now is the Liberty Movement. And either that movement will, I mean, at this point, I used to say either the Republican Party will find a way to incorporate it. At this point, screw the Republican Party. Either it will take over, the Liberty Movement will take over the Republican Party, or the Republican Party will just wither and die because it's vestigial and useless in its current form.
Yep, it is useless in its current form because it's the Rhino Party. And, you know, we say the future is the Liberty Movement. Yes, it is, but it's not the Ron Paul constituency that's the future of the party. It's truly the Liberty Movement. It is people who love the Constitution, who believe that the Constitution is the proper framework for governance in our country, that it works, it has worked, and it can work again. And on those principles, if we just get away from the tertiary issues, you will find massive agreement, not only with Ron Paul and Gary Johnson supporters, true libertarians, voluntarists, anarcho-capitalists, Tea Party conservatives, traditional conservatives, even some Occupy people. You will find vast agreement on many of these things, and it is your responsibility to build these coalitions. If somebody doesn't agree with you on your favorite pet issue, don't write them off, okay? Maybe you have a different position regarding so-called gay marriage, okay? All right, but you probably agree on less taxes, no wasteful spending, okay? Agree on those things. Build a coalition based on that, okay? We can fight out those other details in the Spartan pit, as Tex always says, in Congress, in violent debate, later. Right now we have a republic to save. And if you love this country, and if you love the Constitution, and if you love liberty,
then set down your hatchet and quit beating up on each other and form coalitions and make your voice heard and be loud and put pressure on the politicians at all levels of government in order to claim our inheritance of a constitutional republic with state sovereignty and individual liberty. And then we can fight out these other issues. Okay? There's no need for us to allow them to divide us, because that's what the duopoly does. They divide us, they pit us against each other, and then they give us this false choice that they're going to solve the problems, which they have created. Have you noticed that 90% of the bills that they pass are reform bills? Why do they have to keep reforming this stuff? Because they keep fucking it up in the first place. So you don't put them back in there. If they're the guys that caused the problem, you don't send them back in to fix it. Okay? You send in a true change agent, someone who will ruffle the feathers, who will piss off the special interests, who will step on the lobbyists' toes. But you can't send them in alone. They need a force multiplier, and that's you. So as Tex just said, you know, it's the 12th day of Christmas, the Epiphany. This is the celebration of the night that three Gentiles from as far away as Persia crossed the vast desert to come and pay homage to a Jewish Messiah who was born as a little child, okay? And what was his purpose? Was to bring hope and salvation to the world. So don't put your faith in princes, only put your faith in God. But your job is to pray as if everything depends on God, but you are to work as if everything depends on you. And your work is to spread the message of liberty, to build coalitions, to praise and thank politicians who stand up and do the right thing, like Justin Amash and Ted Yoho, and to denigrate and put pressure on those who cave to the principles that they say they stand for, like Crying Tan John Boehner and Little Mitch McConnell and all those other losers. So there's a lot of hard work ahead, but it's you know, celebrate, be happy, because the fact is that we're Americans, and it's exciting to be here at this time to be part of the restoration of the Republic once more. So we'll see you next week at 10 p.m. on Sunday. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.